want to take this opportunity to welcome you to this important meeting. Before we start with our agenda, we'll recognize the apologies we have received. Apologies from Honorable Feltana, Honorable Mwabe, Honorable Matale, Honorable Kruka, Honorable Fandale, Honorable Folser. We have received an apology from the Minister, Deputy Minister, and DG. We have extended the invitation to Provincial Chairperson of Portfolio Committees to join us on this important meeting. We only received confirmation from Honorable Chair from Limpopo. If you can just take a bow so that we must thank you. And Honorable Makateng from Northern Cape is still here, probably still coming. And Honorable Makaman from Gauteng will be joining us. And we want to extend our welcome to honorable members who have extended this invitation, because we, as an agricultural family, we have to move together so that we are able to deliver on our mandate of making sure that the Department of Agriculture, Fishery and Forestry under Minister Zokwan is delivering food, or is making sure that there is food secure and safety in the country. And we want to take this opportunity to welcome you, honorable members, and department and guests that are here. On our agenda, we will have the we'll have the presidency led by the EPME to present on National Food Nutrition Security Implementation Plan. Honorable members, you remember we had a workshop where they came and presented, and we were told that the plan was still on the pipeline. It's not yet been adopted by cabinet, so they will come. We'll said we'll invite them later to come and present the plan to us. Honorable Minister, because you lead all this delegation, you can say something, a few words, and then we'll get the delegation to present.
Thanks, Chairperson. Honorable members, I think we through the plan was approved by cabinet, and it also included two other main departments, the Department of Health and the Department of Social Development, and ordered us to have a team that works to reflect those three departments, not excluding other departments. But as a country, by 2015, we are aware that about 795 million people in the world were classified as undernourished. And that number was reduced by 167 million. But the challenge of climate change has made the situation bad. In South Africa, 14.3 million people are vulnerable to hunger as measured by the household food access scale. The immediate problems Africa faces on the food and nutrition security is that of access and quality. Food production is there, but in some areas it does not reach those who are in need of it. If they reach it, they are impeded by the fact that the prices sometimes may be a problem. I will not take time, Chairperson, as you have said, but allow the team to present, and I may come back later.
Going to present? Oh, welcome back, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Committee, and the Honorable Minister, who's leading our team today. Chair, today there's going to be a number of us delivering different sections of the same presentation, which we developed together and jointly. But to show the integration that the Honorable Minister Zogwana was referring to, we're going to be taking turns to do different components. Chairperson, before Mr. Manuel starts, and will be followed by Mr. Nechipale, I also need to make reference to a number of directives that we received from this committee when we came to present in February 2016. As the Honorable Chairperson accurately alluded to, that the plan at this stage was in its early phase of development. There were a number of marching orders that we got from the Joint Portfolio Committees. The first one was that we need to start implementing the plan as we develop it, that we don't wait for the plan to be completed, but we fix the aircraft while it is in motion. Chairperson, we are going to be reporting back to the committee on the progress that we have made with both the development and the implementation of the relevant aspects of the plan. Secondly, Honorable Chairperson, you did make reference to the fact that we mentioned that the plan had yet to be submitted to Cabinet. We are pleased to inform the Honorable Committee that on the 22nd of November 2016, Honorable Minister Hadebe led a team to the Cabinet Committee on Social Protection, Human and Community Development, where the plan was tabled. And the committee noted the plan and indicated that once the costing has been completed, we will return and table it once more for final endorsement. So the costing has started, it's ongoing, it's being conducted by an external stakeholder. The last issue, Chairperson, was that of consultation with all key stakeholders. And in this presentation, we are going to be appraising the committee as well of the consultations that we have conducted to date, the feedback that we have received from the different consultations, and how we have built that feedback into the plan. Lastly, Honorable Chair, to indicate that there are linkages between this plan and the Operation Pakisa on Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. So as we do this plan, we are also going to be referring to aspects that will be addressed in the other presentation on Operation Pakisa. With your permission, Honorable Chairperson, I'd like to hand over to my colleague, Mr. Manya.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. I will do the first part and allow my colleague to take the other bits and we'll see how we complete that. The outline basically of the document that we will present to the members includes looking at the overview of the food and nutrition security in the country. We will also look at the draft plan itself, the consultations that we've done, and where we are at the moment in terms of the implementation, because As we develop the plan, at the same time we are implementing, because some of the components of the plan are not new, but we are integrating, we are strengthening, we are expanding on some of them. There may be areas that are relatively new. On the slide number 4, we're basically showing the policy framework. From the Constitution, the right to food is entrenched. The National Development Plan talks to the food security and nutrition, both resulting from poverty and inequality that would need to be addressed. The cabinet has already approved, we would know, the national food, the policy on food and nutrition security. And from the national development plan, we have several outcomes that are talking to various aspects of the food security. And of course, in the sustainable development goals that have been agreed upon, there are several goals that talk to the food and nutrition issues in terms of ending poverty, ending hunger, sustainable production and consumption. This slide, slide number five, basically talks to the number of persons and households that have been benefiting from social grants to address both poverty and hunger. The minister has already indicated that as a country, our problem, an immediate problem, it's not primarily the production and therefore the availability of food. What we must address in the immediate is the access to food. That's the first thing. Secondly, we must address the quality or the nutritional aspect of the food without neglecting the production and the availability. But the bigger issue is that while there is food in the country, not people are able to access that food sufficiently in time, and the food that would be nutritious. Now, this particular graph shows how the grants, of course, increase the access of those that are vulnerable. Now, the two graphs, the green and the blue, of course, the blue talks to the persons, whereas the green talks to the households, that from the time when they were receiving the grant, and you could see that number has been rising of those people who are benefiting, and of course, that also the two graphs, the red line, I hope it's a red line, the two lines that are going down, both the red and the purple, shows how this has been impacting on poverty. Of course, up to a certain point, if you look at from 2011, those lines below, the red and the purple ones, are almost leveling. And that's just we may need to look at why our instruments' impact is starting to decline. But it shows that there has been a great benefit from those who have had access grants. The next slide talks to the access. People who have had inadequate access and the 14.3 million versus the total population. And you will see that the higher numbers you find of those who have inadequate access are in the Eastern Cape, in KwaZulu-Natal, and in Gauteng. And that, of course, if you look at Gauteng and also Western Cape, their numbers are largely bigger, and it's talking to some other aspect of access in the urban areas. And if you look at Limpopo, although it's one of the poorer provinces, but in terms of the access, they seem to be the province that has the lowest of numbers of those who do not have access to food. And we do, we're trying to understand this much better, but we ascribe this partially to the fact that they may be having access due to their own local production, and it might be improving their situation. But we try to do more work to understand this even better. The slide number seven basically shows you the various indicators that we are looking at. Some of those indicators are indicators that have to do with the income that would improve the access, the percent of people who are vulnerable to hunger, both persons and households. We often would want to take this together. But from there also, look at those who are vulnerable, and look at those who in effect are experiencing the hunger. And then, of course, the effects in terms of nutrition on the children and of course on adults by gender, both those who are obese and those who are overweight, and the percentages are given there. The next slide talks to the interventions of government in terms of the national policy on food and nutrition, what programs are being implemented from the social departments and from the economic programs. Now, in terms of the plan, Mr. Masilela has already indicated where we come from, that we already had in 2013 a policy approved. It was later followed by an evaluation that was done on the nutrition interventions for the children under five. And of course the findings were very interesting, that our food security interventions are not linked to either nutrition or consumption. That was one of the interesting findings. But also that when we compare to a number of countries that are similar to South Africa, we do not have a single or coherent strategy or policy or plan that pulls all the interventions together to realize the right to food as determined in the Constitution. And we do not have, therefore, a coordinating structure to pull all of this together. And therefore, Cabinet directed that we integrate all the plans, all the interventions, and this draft is intended basically to implement those decisions. And therefore, that decision or those decisions or those directives have indicated that our plan should reflect commonality in terms of vision across government departments, common set of goals and objectives, indicators and targets, as well as budgeting for the implementation of these activities, and that we enable the country to address these problems of hunger, largely in our case that deals with access, malnutrition and micro nutrient deficiencies that would affect the growth of the children, their cognitive development as envisaged in the National Development Plan. The slide number 12 basically indicates, as we were developing this plan, under the leadership of the presidency, how the participation has been like, who was involved. And you would see a number of government departments that were involved, but also in addition, we also have some of the UN bodies or UN agencies involved, contributing, and other NGOs and the universities have been taken on board. And therefore, this draft plan is seen as a collaborative effort of a number of departments. There were also provincial departments, the tributary councils, the non-profit organizations, and the universities I've indicated. Now, the draft plan that we are presenting, its vision is for an optimal food security, enhanced nutrition for all South Africans, and we would want to significantly improve the food security and reduce the malnutrition. So we want to address hunger and malnutrition in all its forms in South Africa so that people are able to lead productive and healthy lives. And our goals include ensuring that we have a governance and leadership system, institutional frameworks that include the policies and the strategies, we reform the current duplications that exist and uncoordinated delivery of our interventions, and ensure we implement this comprehensive plan or its initiatives in a coordinated and integrated manner. And this draft plan has six strategic objectives. And those objectives you will, and I will show you in the next slide, which department leads and which departments are contributing or supporting. The first strategic objective has to do with the establishment of a multi-sectoral food and nutrition security council that will oversee the policies, the legislation, the programs, and it will be the umbrella body. And this is the body that we believe, when established, will be led from the presidency. The strategic objective number two deals with the ensuring that we have inclusive local food value chains to support the access to nutritious and affordable food. It will deal with the production, and it will deal with access from the perspective of if people produce locally, they probably would be able to access food better, but it also contributes to other aspects of the local food value chains. Strategic objective number three has to do with expanded targeted social protection measures and sustainable livelihood programs. We've already shown in one of the graphs the importance of the safety nets. Strategic objective number four, scale up the high impact of nutrition-specific interventions targeting nutritionally vulnerable groups across the life cycle. Our emphasis is moving forward is of nutrition-sensitive interventions or nutrition-sensitive programs. Number five, develop an integrated communication plan so that we can influence people across the whole life cycle to make informed decisions on food and nutrition. And then number six, develop a monitoring and evaluation system for food and nutrition security, and of course including an integrated risk management system for monitoring those risks. And this slide number 16 basically shows those six strategic objectives, who leads. The first one, the presidency leads. The second one, DAF leads. They are contributing departments. The third one, social development leads. The four and five, Department of Health leads. The last one, number six, will primarily be led by the DPME with SSA and DAF contributing. The first objective, it will involve the establishment of this council that will be chaired by the Deputy President, I've already said. You also go on to establish other structures at a provincial and a local level that will ensure that there is adequate coordination. And of course it would integrate the various programs that are in place and make sure that they work towards realizing this objective. Number two deals with the local food value chains. It will involve a number of activities that would have to do with the production systems, the access to markets, the local food systems in those communities, of course ensuring that there is capacity to improve the production and market access, the agri-information system that supports that, and of course commercializing the superfoods through biofortification. And we would know that there are certain foods that contribute a lot to nutrition, like amaranth, but the smallholder farmers or commercial farmers would not necessarily produce those until we make sure that the market has been educated to absorb that. It is that we would need to bring into the space. The massification of the inland fish farming and aquaculture for ensuring there's enough protein produced, of course, and consumed. And of course, the evaluations that were done on growing the smallholder sector, that we implement those recommendations from the evaluation plan. The objective number three, that deals with expanding the targeted social protection measures and sustainable livelihood programs, ensuring that we implement the universal child grant registration for all those children who have been born in the public facilities from conception, so that they are able to access all the support, but we are also able to budget for them and provide the adequate resources. And also it involves, of course, integrated social protection register and information systems, improving on the current public works programs, and implementing the livelihoods simulation program for youth, for urban areas, where non-agricultural projects or agricultural interventions may be required. Number four, scale up the impact of the high-impact nutrition interventions, and this would include the water, sanitation and hygiene, lifestyle behavior communication plan, and also building the capacity at various levels to ensure that we provide support for improved maternal and child nutrition. Incorporate both the food and nutrition security and the WASH into the school curricula so that this education would impact ultimately on the whole community. Of course, scaling up and increasing the coverage of the nutritional supplements, the folic acid and iron, also implement the strategy to encourage delayed and onset adolescent pregnancy, improving and intensifying the strategy to support and promote breastfeeding, and scaling up on the micronutrients in the infants, and of course the deweaning of children, and therefore improve the utilization of the food consumed, and of course strengthening the early childhood development centers. The number five, which deals with a communication plan, it's really more strengthening the communication campaigns around behavior that is necessary for effective utilization of the nutrition and support measures, implementing the policies, the regulations, and the programs that would also support the behavior change towards health and sound nutrition. And of course, make sure that we have the champions, we build that cadre of champions who will influence the society as a whole and develop and implement a transformative capacity development plan. And lastly, number six, we would the development of a monitoring system as well as an integrated risk management. We will have a national surveillance system for food and nutrition security that will make sure that we put together data, that data is analyzed, and the information is provided for proper decision-making. So we make sure we have evidence-based decision-making. And then, of course, develop a set of indicators and make sure that we have a reporting and alert or an early warning system. Chair, I will not talk to virtually everything, but this slide shows the benefits of optimal nutrition, that if we, and basically a logical system, that if there is an understanding, the appropriate decisions that are made, they would actually contribute ultimately to a system where we have improved child nutrition and development. And we have a set of indicators that have been identified in firstly slide number 24 on the indicators that deals with the reduced experience of hunger, and we've indicated what basic indicators we would use and what additional indicators we would use. In some cases, we have the baseline information. In other cases, we're still establishing that. In slide number 25, that continues the decrease in months of food shortages among the poor and the vulnerable and the marginalized, and we indicate the number of households that will be experiencing moderate food inadequacy. We the baseline at the moment is that, and we even indicating the proposed target by 2022. And that goes on to slide number 25, that talks largely to the stunting, the overweight, the wasting, the anemia in the pregnant and non-pregnant women. Slide number 27 deals with indicators around the breastfeeding for children under 6 months, the low birth weight, overweight, and obesity, which has become an area that our Department of Health is making sure we are very conscious that people do not just have food, but they have quality food and make the right choices. We, and I'm just informing the chair and members of some of the consultations we have undertaken. We have held a food and nutrition security in Durban early in the year, and this was the intention to bring even more people on board, and FAO was kind in supporting us with this endeavor. And we have had this consultation, and the process included, of course, we wanted to look at zooming into the 27 poorer areas, the poorer districts, and of course look at others that are more vulnerable, and we these were some of the discussions. And you'd see in slide number 30 who participated, and we did we had commissions that made inputs into the six strategic objectives. And from the outcomes of that endeavor or that consultation, we have taken those to incorporate them again to enrich this draft plan. And some of the key issues that were raised in that endeavor was the need for an economically inclined indicators that include the food price, increments the contribution of the private sector. Of course, the emphasis again on one single agency to direct the implementation and the accountability, the need for an MNE unit to make sure that the appropriate tools and guidelines for standardization are developed, and of course a standard operating procedure to guide the reporting, and the need for awareness to the community and the stakeholders so that everybody takes ownership. And perhaps, Chair, we thought we should give you also a sense, and I'm moving to slide number 33, by objective, where are we? As we are developing this document, which is not complete, but where are we? In terms of strategic objective number one, the terms of reference for the council that will be chaired by the president have been developed. We also have a progress report that was submitted to the presidency, and as I've indicated already, part of the initiatives have been the food security in Durban. We have already presented this draft plan to the Cabinet Committee on Social Protection and Human Development Cluster, and to the Economic Sectors and Employment and Infrastructure Cluster of the DGs. It still has to go to the other clusters. We still expect to go to the other remaining clusters, because we believe the food security is in many senses a regional matter. It is also a security matter, that if there is a food shortage, it might destabilize a country, and therefore we would want to make sure all the clusters provide inputs. On strategic objective number two, we have given, of course, on slide number 36, basically some of the interventions in terms of the land utilization, particularly we have referred to the PAKISA, that on agriculture, land and rural development. The next slide, we have given the numbers. But in the next few slides, from slide number 38, it shows in terms of the households who are producing from home, we're supporting through the food gardens, the rainwater harvesting, the drip systems, the boreholes, solar facilities, and of course the handling facilities for a group of households. And we have even indicated in some provinces what the support to the smallholder producers entail, and this we're drawing from some of the inputs in the conditional grants. In the Western Cape, for instance, we have canals and balancing dams that are being refurbished, the irrigation and storage dams in the Northern Cape, the boreholes, the solar energy supply, the handling facilities for livestock, installation of water supply systems, and of course, if you go down to slide number 40, virtually the same in Free State and Limpopo, slide number 41. And slide 42 is what you will receive in the PAKISA, but basically we've shown you the 27 initiatives from PAKISA that we expect will contribute towards the food security when implemented. So I would want to ask my colleague, Mr. Nechipale, who is the DDG from Social Development, to take the next few slides with your permission.
Thanks. To DG Manga, Chairperson, and the honourable members and the minister. I'm going to take the remaining slides as part of the team. As was mentioned, that this is repairing a moving bus, so strategic objective number 3 was the issue of expansion of the social protection measure, which is also covered under outcome 13, social protection. The whole idea under this one, it tells back from our NDP vision 2030, which is central to the provision of social protections, addressing issues of poverty and inequality. And one of the area in that is the issue of food security as the first one. You will realize that under that, South Africa, we are providing over 17 million grants, of which studies have indicated that those monies that we are giving to the older persons, the majority of those goes to children, just over 12 million grants, and just under 6 million grants for older persons. And those studies have indicated that the majority of the money they get goes to food, hence the economic aspect in the country. Second thing was the issue of the ECD. We have got we are subsidizing over 1.1 million children in the country. We give them 15 rand per person or per child per day, of which 6 rand goes to food. And so in terms of that, we also developed a model which there was a gap which you have identified for poverty or poor people, which we developed what you call Household Food and Nutrition Security Program, which is part and parcel of this plan. Manya, can you go down? I won't read word by word, but in this objective, we cover the number of school children that are provided with food at schools, and a total of over 20,000 schools providing nutritional food this year. We targeted 19,000 schools, but I think as the year is going, we will be able to reach that. We developed the model, which is called, I think I'll present it as a case study as we go, where we provide food, cooked meals within communities, nourishes food in the areas which are identified as poor. We also provided 544 children in ECDs, and those are nourished food that we have, and over a total of over 9 million learners were provided with nutritious food. Next slide. We during the three quarters up to date, over 67,000 people received food in CNDC. CNDC is Community Nutrition Development Centers. I will explain what it is. We also provided over 329,000 food with social relief of distress. Social relief of distress is when we assess that the families don't have enough food, they apply for grant, and the grant will take a month or two, then we are provided with food. Either food parcels, or we get a voucher, and it's a broader part of it. And that excludes disasters. Next slide. The case study is about the household food and nutrition model that we developed. Next slide. The next slide. The case study is about the gap that we identified as social development, which we look at the number of people that we miss. These are the people that when you do household profiling, we find families don't have anything to eat. And we were asking, what are we going to do with this? And as part and parcel of our responsibility to provide subsistence to vulnerable people, we develop a model where within the areas there is an NGO or an NPO that will provide food. We fund it. It cooks meals, one per day, one full meal per day. 5 days per week for now. We wanted to give 7 days per week. Next slide. This is the model. The model looks like this. I won't explain everything, but I think if you ask question, I'll be able to ask. It is that we have got an implementing agent. This is borrowed from the Brazilian approach of zero hunger and a popular restaurant, wherein within the community there will be a non-profit organization that is funded. It procures food from the community itself, and it feeds the community. And people could be fed through cooked meal, or they are given food parcels so that they can go and cook, or we can give it to other areas like drop-in centers and other feeding organizations. But the approach is community-based, and it has got a development in it. The D on Community Nutrition Development Center is that. I will just run through the slide, Manya, if you can just run through. This is where we get the food. We don't go to Pick and Pay. We are not saying we can't go, but we are saying we don't just go to Pick and Pay and buy where as their food are produced within the community. We buy around. Next one. This is the, we have got 9 implementing agents. We were given 53 million, and out of 53, we divided amongst that, and we had 8 NDCs per province. Based on the rurality and the vulnerability that is being assessed, we are currently having 212 CNDCs that we are providing, and they feed a minimum of 250 people. They graduate as they eat. Some of them get work, and then we feed those that are poor. Next slide. This is just an indication in terms of where those 53 million goes to. And provinces also add additional to the totally, as we stand, we have got over 97 million, which we are using. Next slide. Next slide. I think this I have already explained. Next slide, Maya. Next slide. The challenges in implementing the model is that as we begin to feed the people, you know, the NGOs themselves within communities, the areas where they need to feed need to be very clean and appropriate, so that it's not just feeding. We have got some problems in terms of poor infrastructure and also coverage, because we have only 53 million that we need to feed. We find, as we continually go to the 27 priority district, we find there's a lot of more people that need to be fed in terms of this model, in terms of what we're supposed to do. But in collaboration with agriculture and other departments, we are looking at how we can deal with that. Strategic object number four, which is health, I think I will go through that. We have reviewed, next slide, we have reviewed the maternal, newborn, child and adolescents and women's health strategic plan, which incorporates action for ending all forms of malnutrition. You know very well, I think Manya have indicated that the whole purpose of food security, if it's not to deal with outcomes, it becomes useless. It's not just to feed the stomach and people get food, but it needs to address issues of obesity, stunting, malnutrition, and other medical conditions. And I think the reason that was done is to ensure that whatever we do, we achieve our own outcomes. A national integrated supplementary immunization activity campaign was conducted throughout the country in those states. The campaign focused on the provision of polio vaccination, vitamin A supplement, and deworming. And a total of over 1.3 million children under the age of 5 were reached throughout the country. The next slide. Health sector hosted the World Breastfeeding Conference to ensure that people are aware about breastfeeding. The conference also assisted provinces and NGOs to adopt new approaches towards strengthening community-based intervention. The campaign is presented in the form of a poster for use in many public spaces, including the text ranks. This is very important for the country, that we need to have, and everyone must be aware that they need to breastfeed. Next slide. The food fortification regulations are also in the final process of amendments to include fortification of cake flour, which is used by majority in South Africa. I think you know very well that in other areas, some food need to be fortified so that they could last longer. Food fortification program is a long-term strategy aimed at reducing micronutrient deficiencies in the country, and the health sector has implemented a stock visibility system to ensure that public health officials do not run out of drugs, including micronutrients and the nutrition supplement. The next slide is, I will be a lot of numbers in terms of how much we have reached, our increase from 33% to 43% in the exclusive breastfeeding rates, and also the severe acute malnutrition in facility case fatality rate for children under 5 also improved during the last quarter from 9.3% to 6.3%, something that we need to be very proud of. Access and coverage of deworming interventions among children aged 7 to 4 years improving, and over 4.5 learners received deworming intervention at schools. Next slide. The number of ideal clinic with functional anthropogenic equipment has increased from 322 to 596. This is very important to ensure that we measure malnutrition at its earliest stage. Availability of anthropogenic equipment results in improved quality of care. Children with gross faltering are identified early and provided with treatment to avoid progress to severe malnutrition. Next slide. Objective number 5 is the development of an integrated communications plan to influence people across the life cycle to make informed food and nutrition decisions in the country. Here, to address the high prevalence of overweight and obesity in the country, Department of Health has prioritized healthy meals provision in various settings. One of the settings is what I've described in the CNDC and currently in ECD. You realize that in CDs and drop-in centers, people were just, and in, even at schools, people were just eating soup and bread. So this, in order to do that, we make sure that proper nutrition with three colors is provided at all these areas. In the workplace, priority was given to government departments. To date, 39 national government departments and three parastatals have been oriented on the provision of health meals in the workplace. Some departments have requested additional support to change menus in their canteens, and I think maybe we'll do it also in Parliament. Nutrition guidelines for ECD programs have also been developed. Next slide. I was saying one of the things we will also do it in Parliament so that you provide nutritious food even where they are. The strategic objective number six, develop a monitoring and evaluation system for and including an integrated risk management system for monitoring food and nutrition security related risks. A case study, the South African Vulnerability Assessment Committee. I think Prof. Will can take us. Dr. Mien.
Thank you, Portfolio Committee Chair and the honorable members and the invited guests. We are, as part of ensuring that we target the most vulnerable in the country, are part of a SADC initiative which introduced vulnerability assessments. And that was actually done in collaboration with all the 15 SADC countries, South Africa being one of the main ones that joined the launch during 1999. And in 2009, these National Vulnerability Assessment Committees were launched. These are actually intended to provide technical advice whilst creating a platform for technical discussions and synchronization of data on people's vulnerability for the purposes that have actually been deliberated here in this room, that we need this multi-sectoral approach to food security because it cannot be done by one or single department. But in terms of coming to the actual South African Vulnerability Assessment Committee work, we have actually adopted a combination of two approaches, which is actually the household economy approach, which looks at the household's ability and systems of how they make a means to get food. And we actually use that approach to focus analysis for food security. And the food security continuum measures a set of indicators that determine how food insecure people are at a point in time using various categorization. Portfolio Committee, Chairperson and the Honorable Members, it would be so good to have this presentation made at one point because it's very useful in terms of guiding targeted approaches and focused vulnerable people because, you know, the previous presenter, Mr. Netipale, was just indicating that, you know, some people would not access food because they don't know, firstly, about it. Some of them, they cannot even reach the CNDC, and it's impossible for them to even have the transport money. Now, these are some of the interventions that have been introduced at SADC level, and South Africa has been part of that and is running with that process. And it uses measures and indicators which measure wealth breakdown in terms of how big is the household. What is the income of this the income of this household, the livestock that this household own? Those are used to measure their wealth. And in terms of the sources of food, expressed as a percentage of minimum average food needs, energy needs, which is the 2,100 kilojoules per day that is needed by a person. This further is system further checks the sources of annual cash income by wealth group. We also check the dietary diversity across livelihoods, because the one other aspect that the SADC process did was to actually demarcate the countries into livelihood zones, so that we can be able to measure the people that are residing in open access or the rural areas versus those that are residing in urban or private owned land. And the agricultural involvement is also measured as a measure, and the indicator there is the involvement in agriculture, as well as the access to basic services in terms of, are these people able to access water and sanitation? And just briefly, quickly, the some of the areas that have been covered, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Minister and the Honorable Members, is that there's a technical resource team which has been formed, and this is inclusive of the parties that are in this room, as well as the SSA, which is the custodian of all the statistics. And there is now this methodological framework that has been adopted by the country. And the process now is now incorporating this into the provincial systems through the premier's offices. And just briefly, the process has covered at least around 19 livelihood zones in the country out of 190. And this provides a baseline assessment and baseline information on who in the both open access, urban, or exclusive, which is the private farm, are actually more vulnerable. But the results in a nutshell have actually indicated that the poor form the bulk of those that are depending on staple purchases, and they depend on cash transfers, which is inclusive of grants and remittances. That we find that especially remittances, when you look at the scale, is that areas like Limpopo and Eastern Cape are actually the ones that are more recipients of remittances, which confirms the fact that most people migrate into urban areas to look for areas for work so that they can send money back, which is what is happening in this case. And in terms of the middle and better off, these are actually dependent on formal employment, and they have sales of livestock, and they were more involved in agriculture as compared to the poor. And zones that had low levels of hunger, as it will be seen in Limpopo, actually had high agricultural involvement. And the conclusive remarks, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Minister and the Honorable Members, is that the poor are actually showing that they are the bulk and the majority in these studies, and they, we need therefore to redirect resources towards the poor. And in fact, just as an emphasis, is that the poor are actually the more that migrate mostly, trying to look for employment and formal employment, and they are the actual ones that have more access to grants, and as a result, the grants are not sufficient enough to cover the activities of agriculture, which is where the plan comes in, because then we need to converge to say, how do we merge the social grants source together with the agricultural interventions. And I think I would like to end there for now, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, and the Honorable Members.
Honorable Chair. Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, the last two slides of our presentation are the concluding remarks. Our first point is that the government and its social partners are approaching the finalization and implementation of the National Food and Nutrition Security Plan in an integrated manner. That is why even the presentation this morning has taken the form of a relay including a number of government departments that are contributing to the development of this plan.
As Mr. Manya mentioned in the first part of the presentation, we have taken the plan to various consultative fora. We've taken it to cabinet as well. I mentioned that there's costing work that is being undertaken. The service provider is Cornerstone and DNA Economics, who are a consortium. Again, the point we made at the outset of this presentation is that in the last 12 months, from February 2016 up to February 2017, the work that we have been doing as different government departments has been consistent with the directives that we have received from the two portfolio committees, which said implement as you develop, don't wait in a static manner before you start putting in place measures that can be done immediately. In the part of the presentation that was tackled by Mr. Peter Nechipale, we have observed that social protection measures are making an important contribution in mitigating food security in the country. Questions still remain, however, which include issues of sustainability, which I think members of this committee and other committees have asked as well. The sustainability, the coverage of the social protection measures and their impact, particularly in a constrained fiscal environment in which we find ourselves. The long-term vision is that the socio-economic conditions of South Africans should improve to enable the people of this country to be self-sufficient through enhanced skills, entrepreneurship, access to economic opportunities, and access to government support to become successful smallholder or commercial farmers. That is the long-term vision. But again, as the presentation, that part of the presentation covered by Mr. Mochima Manya indicated, we are implementing smallholder support farmer programs to enable them to thrive. Another point that we have observed, and which is more pertinent to sourcing of food from SMMEs, is that we need to do better targeting and provide support to them and scale up the quantities of food that we purchase from SMMEs, be it for schools, be it for CNDCs, be it for other purposes. Chairperson, I think we'd like to end our story there and hand back to the committee. Maybe Minister wants to make concluding remarks.
Thanks. I think this outlines the work we have been, the teams have been doing since were directed by Cabinet, taking into account the massive work we have to do, informed by the statistics of how many people are exposed to hunger and malnutrition and all those challenges.
Thank you, Minister, and your team. Honorable members, that was the report. Maybe just to welcome the report at today's data, Mr. Masha. Thank you very much. At least there is a sense of direction. Well done, department. Honorable members, that was the presentation. Let me welcome honorable members that have joined us later from Gauteng and Northern Cape. Welcome, honorable members. That was the presentation, honorable members. You are welcome to interact with the report. Honorable Stein, honorable Mapanga, honorable Jaisa, honorable Kapa, and honorable Maloi. As I have noted,
thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you for the presentation by the department. Chair, I also have to welcome the report. I think anything that's moving in the right direction is good, Chair, but I must also say I've just read the report again of 2013, and one of the things that I read in there is it said, during 2010, the diagnostic report of the National Planning Commission identified a failure to implement, My point is that was identified in 2010. It's now 2017. And I get frustrated with the slow turning of the wheels of departments, Chair. So it's not trying to take away the fact that at least something is moving now. I didn't get the impression that before 2013 and maybe even before 2016 the wheels were turning. So maybe the work that this committee with the other committees are doing in getting the departments to come and present is helping. And I think, Chair, we need to continue with that. We can't just stop and say, you know, now we leave the department again for 3 years to turn the wheels very slowly to get to some kind of a point. With that long opening, Chairperson, I would like to find out, again, and I know I asked the questions last time, but if I read between slides 5 and 6 that talks about the percentages, if you take slide 5, where it says households receiving grants, households vulnerable to hunger, we work on persons vulnerable to hunger in 2015 on 13.1%. But if you go to the next slide, 6, where it now says something else, individuals with inadequate and severely inadequate access to food, where it talks about 2015, it talks about 14.3. So I want to find out if we have both. We have the slide on 5 that says persons vulnerable to hunger, 13.1%, plus slide 6, where it says year 2015, 14.3%, because the heading says something else. It says individuals with inadequate and severely inadequate access to food. So, Chair, we are back at what we asked last episode. If we can just clarify that, if it's both or what is the story, because that will give us another indication. Then I want to find out, Chairperson, also on slide 5, the blue one, persons receiving grants. If you look at the number under 2015, it says 30.1. What is it? 30 million or what does the 30.1 says? Because persons receiving grants is definitely not 30 million. So I would like to find out what 30 says. Chairperson, that's now enough on facts and figures. I think it's shocking even that. I want to find out with this discussion, I'm not sure if the minister who could answer that, but what is the discussion from government in the gap, the people receiving grants and the people that don't have a job or any other income? Because I think that's where the gap exists in South Africa, and that's maybe why we can't get that line on slide 5. If you look at the green and blue of people, households and people receiving grants, and the line of people with severe hunger, it's not working. Something is not gelling. So my personal feeling is that the people in between, the gap, the people that don't receive a grant or don't work, who have no income, no money, they are that how many million that I'm not sure between slide 5 and 6. What are we doing? And I know there was a discussion about NGOs and others, the small little towns where I come from, there is nothing for those people. So what progress are we making, and do we have a number of people that is missing, or is it that the total of slide 5 and 6? So it's a long kind of answer, Chair, but I think we will get to a long question, but I'm sure we'll get to the answer. So I'm just concerned about that people that we miss. What is the role specifically then from the Department of Agriculture? Because not all of them can participate in agricultural work. So how? Where do we find them? How do we find them? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, the Minister and the Department, the President and colleagues. Chairperson, let me also welcome the presentation, as it shows the progress, and it means that going forward we'll be having the progressive society. I thank for the wonderful work. However, Chair, I have some issues that I want to raise. Chair, on slide 10, with the increased population and the obviously high demand for food, neglecting to establish a regulatory body or a policy will be an oversight, since South Africa as stated in the National Plan for Food and Nutrition Security does not have yet a single or coherent strategy or policy or regulatory system. Are there reasons perhaps as to why this is so? Then, Chair, zooming to slide 55, where it talks to challenges. Were any measures such as consultation undertaken to mitigate the challenges stated here? By what percentage have these challenges deviated us from the plan, and how soon can we get back on track? And moving on, slide 63, Chair, it is a good initiative by the Department of Health to address high prevalence of overweight and obesity in the country. But how is the progress as far as the awareness of the nation is concerned? And also another key factor here is that of food pricing. It is quite expensive, so one consumes anything they deem fit for consumption, regardless of its nutritious value. Can an intervention be made? Chairperson, I submit that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, the idea of interdepartmental and intergovernmental is very good. I just want to check here with the Chairperson, coming to the households receiving social grants. I would like to know whether perhaps do you work in hand or do consult with the local municipalities to find out the people that are indigent, because I believe when you don't see things happening next door, perhaps you may think things are not happening. These are the people perhaps that might have the actual number, so that now we have more people that will have more households that will be receiving these social this grants. Do you consult with them the idea of intergovernmental or interdepartmental, whatever? Again, all of the Chairperson, in the presentation it was said now there's more food that is being produced which is not necessarily linked to consumption. Perhaps does it mean we produce more than it is required? Then if that is the case, would it be regarded as a futile exercise not to produce more? So how can this now be kept so that now we don't produce more than it is necessary, so that we don't have any waste? So I want to check now, is there any plan perhaps now to keep that? The National Food and Nutrition Security in the above 26th and 27th January. I would like to know whether was it the first one perhaps to be held. If there were outcomes, were these outcomes carried out? If it was the first one, then what plans perhaps now were there to carry out these outcomes for this National Food and Nutrition Security in Durban? The last one perhaps, I was so very much unhappy now when I heard that it is 6 rand per child per day. So I was wondering now, perhaps now if 6 rand per try to feed the person a child now. But is there any plan perhaps now that this amount can be increased? Because it cannot be correct that now 6 rand per child per day. So what is 6 rand per day? Just something that is shown to be seen that is never seen again. I'm just checking on those. Thank you very much.
Honorable Chopper. Thank you, Chair. Let me join my colleagues in appreciating the work done. I also believe that the plan is wonderful. Therefore, I think it will help if it materializes. But now, first, my question would be, do we have any mechanisms to ensure that the nutrition at schools is the quality that we need? Because here we can fund, but if we don't monitor, you cannot always trust the people that we have assigned the duty that they must feed the children. There may be a lot of dishonesty there. They need some mechanism. And there's also, you are talking of the Zedu chain for locals. That one also I would need to find if there's any way to make sure that these people you assign them the task, you don't give them the money and they go and buy food from Spa and Checkers and say they've bought from locals. Well, that becomes a problem as well. There's also, there may be also a possibility of the abuse of the grant for a child, because you don't give the grant to the child. You give it to someone. And this someone may use this money for something else. I'm sure you know cases where the money for the grant for the child is goes to a mother, and the child is in Bizana, and the mother is in Durban, getting the money and doing something else with the money. And that, to me, that may be an abuse, which I think maybe you are designing methods of controlling it. Yeah. Now, in this, you also talked of school. But I haven't heard of, or should I say, what happened to the school gardens? Because school gardens used to be doing two things, that new food is produced at the same time. The techniques of producing food was going there to the children. But now the culture of producing seems to have gone. You know that we have a problem that the production in the gardens becomes a punishment. When you come late in school, then you're going to work in the garden. There are issues which are raised by social development. What guarantees that that food is nutritious? You also mentioned that when you give that food, when you give that money, 6 rand goes to food and nutritious food. How do you guarantee that? I haven't had any, maybe the involvement of law enforcement or some legislation which would be involved, because I can assure you that there's a lot of things that could be done that would be happening with people as long as there's money involved. It's always vulnerable. Some people will behave in a way that they would like to make profit at the expense of those who want to give money and nutrition. Now, also, in you mentioned that part of directing the resources to the most poor. I think this one was falling short of saying resources directed to those who produce for the poor. I think Honorable Zogwana would be happy about that one if you say resources must be directed to those who are going to produce them. But the smallholders. But now there's that part of Limpopo. I think you are missing information that you have there. I think that is very, very important. If you make a serious research, because it would be useful to other provinces,
before someone comes from America and make a research and say, no, because they have been exported to Johannesburg, that's why they are not there, the poor people. There's a reality that those people, they still have the culture and the tradition of making use of their land or the resources around them. But that information, to me, it would be very useful for even for other provinces, because it's positive. Can you?
I'm handing over to you, Chair. It is now my turn to speak. The first question which I'm going to raise, and I want you to listen attentively, it's a very serious one. And you'll understand why it's a serious question. Some few weeks ago, in this same room, we had a meeting with ARC and NAMAC. They were presenting a progress report on the usage of hemp. And in that presentation, at the end, it was very clear that the feasibility study is not yet complete, and they've started that study 20 years ago. 20 years ago. And it was not yet complete. Now, here is my question, and I want you to be very honest when you answer this question. The policy was approved by Cabinet in 2013. That's according to you, in 2013, approved by Cabinet. And subsequent to that, an intergovernmental technical working group under the leadership of the Deputy President was established to work on the plan. On the plan. Now, the plan, it is still in a draft form, according to you. And when you submitted the draft plan, and I'm not sure because I did not get the date from yourselves, when did you submit it to Cabinet? But when you submitted it, Cabinet said, go cost it and come back with a costed plan. And it appears as though you are not yet there. Because I don't see 2014 in actual fact, I see 2015. 2015, there was a workshop with provinces where a number of provinces did not attend. And then in 2016, there was another consultative meeting which was funded by FAO and so on and so forth. I'm not sure what was happening in 2014, whether there was a lull or what was happening. We are now in 2017. Very soon we'll be in 2018 and so on. And it seems we are still consulting. But we are not at the end of the process. It seems we are still having a draft. We have not even submitted a costed plan to Cabinet. And my worry is that if we don't move with speed, we might encounter a similar problem to that one of hemp. That in 20 years' time, you'll come back to us and say, we are still costing and so on, consulting with different stakeholders and so on and so forth. Do you have a plan? When do you intend to complete this plan? When are you going to submit a costed plan to Cabinet? When are we going to have a complete plan, not a draft, as a country? And then as this portfolio committee and other portfolio committees, we are supposed to play an oversight role. We'll be knowing that we are now playing an oversight role on this plan, which is not a draft. Are there timelines? Do you have time frames? Because from where I'm sitting, I assume that you understand that each and every work that you do, you must apply the SMART principles. And everything must have time on it and so on. And that will make work easier for everybody in order to monitor you and ensure that you do your work as expected. So that is the main question which I want to raise. And I hope that you'll be honest with myself and answer it honestly. Because I wouldn't want next time when we meet, unfortunately, you know, Chair, I was not in the previous meeting where you met with members of the portfolio committee, and they are very impressed this is the work that you have done, and they are congratulating you. I can't do it because I was not there. I will only do it after you have answered the first question and when you come back to me. That is the first question, Chair. The second question is on page number 5. You know, the presenter says to us, slide number 5. The presenter says the impact is declining from 2011. The impact is declining. And the presenter is posing a question. We are not sure why the impact is declining. I want you to answer that question. You must tell us, as the members of parliament. Don't pose questions like us. Tell us why is it declining in order for us to have an understanding. If you can answer that question, I will be able to interact with you better when we deal with this matter. On slide 13, Chair, it is related to that main question. You know, September 2015, provincial departments attended this one-week workshop, which I assume that you are workshopping them on the police and so on. But others did not attend. And unfortunately, it's not all provinces that are here, because I would have wanted them to also answer. And why didn't they attend? Because to me, this is very important. It is linked to a question which was raised by Honorable Njaisa as it relates to local government and so on and so forth. Because for this plan to succeed, or for this policy to succeed, it means all of us, all the three spheres of government must be involved. But when other provinces decide not to take this matter seriously, then I become very concerned. You might want to share with us as to why didn't they attend and so on, but if they did not share that information with yourself, Chair, we might want as a committee just to pose this question in those provinces in order for them to tell us as to why didn't they attend this important engagement, because to me it is an important engagement. Maybe in black provinces they've solved these problems, they don't have problems. Food is plentiful, no one is going hungry in those provinces. Maybe that is a possibility. So, but they might want to talk to us on that one, and we'll be very happy. On slide number 16, just a question. And you know I'm bringing this question deliberately because my focus is on agriculture. Not necessarily, I'm not concerned about what's happening in social development and health and so on. The strategic objective, number 6, presenter, TDG. You know when you said DAF, you said the lead department is DAF SA, you said DPME, then you said DAF is contributing. Is DAF a lead department, part of the lead department? Because I want, when I engage with you in the next meeting, I must know whether you are a lead department or you are just contributing. Because you encapsulated a word, contributing. So I don't want to be confused when I interact with you going forward. Thanks, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I want to just to be general and not be specific on the presentation that has been made, Chairperson. Mine is around, we have been told of the statistics around the challenges that departments are facing regarding feeding school feeding schemes and other matters. But the main thing that has come to my mind is the biggest challenge that the country is facing of our people seeing scavenging in the dump refusal sites. What is the government doing about it? Because my understanding is that agriculture as well as health should be taking an initiative just to assist those people who are seen living in the dumping sites, scavenging. The point of the school feeding schemes, Chairperson, I had, fortunately, Honorable Kapa has taken it, because I was very worried when you visit schools, you find that kids are only fed with apples at times, just one apple, one orange, for a damn whole day. And some are given rice with soup. Would you say that's a good nutritional feed for the kids to be there for the demo day? And mind you, these suppliers are getting a lot of money out of these schemes, and they don't provide what one would expect they should in providing the kids in our schools. Thank you, Chan.
Welcome, Honorable Pulse. We're responding to the presentation, and so I see you are raising hands. You want to just ask for the sake of asking. Maybe you should wait for the for them to respond for those questions, then we'll take the follow-up question first, Honorable Member.
Chairperson, I take exception to you implying that I'm going to ask a question based on no knowledge. It's very foolish, Chairperson. I must caution you against that.
You are saying what? I can't hear.
Never mind, Chairperson.
Talk to your mic. I can't hear you.
Never mind, Chairperson. I'm going to ask the question anyway. Chairperson, I'm particularly...
You know, this honourable member must withdraw the term foolish, because he's implying that we are a fool. No. Now we can't accept that language in here. He must withdraw that word. Whether he try to justify it or whatever, he must withdraw it. No. Otherwise, you'll have to use your powers in terms of the rules to attend to the behaviour of this member.
Chairperson, why are you letting this boy dictate to you?
No, no. Did you say that I'm a fool?
No, I didn't say so, Chairperson. His interpretation
is
like
he's called me a boy. This member.
Comrade Pulse.
Okay, there's big boy there.
Comrade Pulse, Honorable Pulse, can we please respect the meeting? If you have problems, please don't bring the problems to us. We want to run the meeting. We want to run the meeting peacefully, so because our agenda is very serious.
But
and I'm not going to entertain that. Listen, Comrade Wena, Pulse.
We are no longer comrades, Chairperson. Yeah. We are sold out. Me not.
So, Honorable Pulse.
Chairperson,
I'm not going to allow
you. Who is this person here?
No, listen. Listen to me. I'm chairing the meeting. Why do you want to disrupt the meeting, Honorable Pulse?
This man is interrupting as you speak.
No, I didn't hear him.
But I heard him.
You are using mic to speak. He's not using the mic. You are using the mic because I can. That's why we can hear you. Please respect our meeting, and if we have wronged you, you don't have to. No, yeah. But you must withdraw what you've said first.
Chairperson, you don't even know what I said. No, you don't know what I said, but you're asking me
but
to withdraw.
But withdraw what you said first.
But, Chairperson, if you don't know what I said, how can you ask me to withdraw?
No.
Because you're listening to this member here.
No. Honorable Pulse.
I...
We are members of the committee. We are a collective. They've heard you. Can you withdraw before you ask a question?
Chairperson, what did you call me? Chairperson, for the sake of progress, I'm going to withdraw, but we'll speak about it afterwards. Chairperson, can I pose my question, please? Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, there's two questions. The one is based on the presentation, whereas I think the Honourable Member almost got there. The fact that how are we going to allow people to start growing their own food instead of being reliant on retailers to supply them with food that they have to pay for? how are we going to give that power back to communities, poorer communities, to take care of their own nutritional needs? And that has to be a comprehensive program, because there's no such thing here. It's everything is very vague when it comes to a national plan for food and nutritional security. It's very vague. It has to be a comprehensive plan as to how it's going to roll out, who will be the people involved in it. You know, will we go to the Department of Basic Education to discuss how schools will be involved in this program? Will we be going to local government, seeing how they will play their role in rolling out this plan for addressing the dire nutritional insecurity that exists? We can't. Year in and year out speak about the high levels of nutritional insecurity and speak about the plan, whereas there's no implementation of any sort to address this problem. That's the one question. The other question is, the Titicama Forest Village Trust. Now, this community or these stakeholders have written to the minister as well about this matter. There's no comprehensive response. And the minister is fully aware of it. They've been allocated shares in this particular venture, and they were to benefit from it, and it's been several years still, whereas some American company with the facilitation of SAFCOL has taken our natural resources, deprived communities of a livelihood, and they've received nothing in return. And I have it on good authority, in fact I have evidence, that they have written to the minister. They have asked him to intervene. And I will share it with you as well, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Professor. You know, the reason that I was saying you must wait to ask the question later is that you are asking question for another presentation. Now we have started with another one. That's why I was trying to help you. You didn't want to listen to me, but it's fine. they will respond to the, when we come to the presentation of the other presentation, then they will respond to the last question. The first one you arrived, they'll respond to it. Department and the team, as we welcome your report, indeed we're saying that today there is a better coordinated approach and response to issues that were raised in that meeting. But I want to agree with Honorable Stein and Honorable Maloy that the pace is very slow. And I want the minister to, with your team, just to look at the pace, because we cannot spend for the 5 years developing a plan and implementation plan and costing and when FAO was here presenting the country statistics, South Africa were the biggest country with people of insecure. So, and the pace is problematic to that. If we want to respond indeed, we need to change the pace, and we just need the guarantee from yourself on the pace. The second question is on the, in your presentation, I know that we've not spoken about this food safety, which include issues that honorable members have raised. Whether in the plan, because if even food safety is interdepartmental, it's supposed to be interdepartmental coordinated. Is it part of the plan? I know that when we requested the presentation, we're looking at the implementation plan of the food security, but we have not talked about the safety. Can we just check the issue of the safety, whether it will be part of the entire plan? The third question is that in view of the climate condition, the changes of climate, are we taking cognizance of that and including climate change elements in the plan, particularly in all the plans of various departments? The fourth question is the FFC came here and raised the important issue, which in your presentation you're touching it, on the role of local government on the issue of food security. And because in terms of their functions, there is no role attached to the local sphere of government. So FFC was recommending that, is it not important that government should start define the role of local government in food security issues? I just want to get your comment on that, because I could see that in your presentation you are talking about the three spheres of government, local government is included. The issue of school nutrition, food, it's just education. Is anybody from education here? Okay. You know, the challenge with that is that a plan, probably, what should be the, what food should children be given at schools, but schools are giving them something else. So how in the plan, because you are trying to deal with three issues mainly: food insecure, malnutrition, and life, better lifestyle. So how are we, in your plan, are you going to be able to monitor this thing? Because in one constituency of mine, I visited one school. This school is an agricultural school. These children produce beetroots, carrots, spinach, but they are not eating them at school. They take them home because the principal has got a fear that if something happens as they eat those foods and it found that there is a poison or something, he got a fear of being accountable. So, and that is when I started to have to, there is a bigger problem than we thought in this country. If the principal they produce nice cabbage, nice beetroot, because it's an agricultural school, they give children marks and take those vegetables to go and sell them or to take them home, and they eat. At that time I was at the school and said, I want to eat with the kids. They serve a stamp with the tin of fish. No veg, nothing. Because the principal is afraid of of being interrogated by whoever would be coming if there is a contamination or whatever. So, because, and at that level, it's where you needed those nutritious food, because it's where you have to develop those minors for them to become better persons in near future. So, with the plan, the good plan, are we going to see just a Minister, I'll ask you, because the Deputy President is here, whether there will be a plan from each department which focus on these strategic goals, which deals with the issues of safety, nutritious, and the even the lifestyle issues. If those, are you going to have each department having those plans? If it's not in the plan, can we have it included in this plan? The last one is on the social grant. Chunk of social grant goes to children, which their mothers is either their 8. This nowadays they start at 11, eh? 11. You have children who are 11 years who have children. Yeah. They are starting at 11 to 50. We're supposed to, in the normal society, we expect these people to be productive in one way or another. So as we give these grants, social development, do we have any plan of offloading the system and making sure that the money is used for other development, making this chunk of people productive so that they can be able to support their children? Probably the money can go back to the system and do other development. Do we have any plan besides those that, of course, they are still, they are at school, they will graduate and become professionals and leave the system. There are those that will not actually graduate. What do we do with them in the process so that we assist the fiscals to manage all the needs of the country without having others overtaking others? Thank you very much. Those are the questions. I'm not sure who started. Minister, you want to start or you'll close?
Thanks, Chairperson. I should allow the presenters to answer, then I will close it.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Following on the cue that the Minister has provided, the officials will start. Chairperson, we've been asked a total of 35 questions. And we will ask for the indulgence of the committee as we respond to each of them. I will deal with questions that pertain to the process of the development of the plan and provide more clarity. And then I will leave to Ndate Manya, Ndate Nechipale, Ndate Ramasodi, and colleagues sitting behind us to also assist in responding to the rest. Chairperson, we are very encouraged by the manner in which the committee has welcomed the progress that we have made to date, which is also linked to what the committee directed us to do last year when we first came here. Chair, we are also impatient with our own pace, and then if we had it in our own hands, we would have already been 3 years ahead of where we are right now. But we also take note of what the committee has said about the pace. Just a few quick points about the issue that the Honorable Acting Chair, Deputy Chair raised at the Honorable Whip of the committee. So can I start there, because it then puts the whole plan into context. It is correct that in 2013 Cabinet approved the policy, Integrated National Food and Nutrition Security Policy. In 2014, an evaluation that was commissioned by the TPME looking at nutrition interventions for children under 5 was completed. And it was presented to Cabinet in 2014. Cabinet said no. In 2013, you came with a policy. Now you're coming with an evaluation. Please, can you go back and link the provisions of the policy with the findings of the nutrition and bring back to us an integrated national food and nutrition security plan? And that is when then this actual work started in earnest. I also want to point out that the evaluation found that South Africa does not have a lack of plans to address food security and nutrition. It found that there are 59 programs, policies, strategies, and other forms of interventions aimed at addressing food and nutrition security. Yet, we're doing worse than Mozambique, Malaysia, Colombia, and other comparator countries. So our work was to rationalize, number one, what we're doing, achieve more coherence, achieve more collaboration, achieve more cooperation as government bloc, but also working with food safety, agencies like FAO, UNICEF, WHO, and others. 2015, that's when the first Indaba was held at in Sandton. There were provinces, as you correctly pointed out, that didn't participate, but there was very good participation at the Indaba. We had about 90 people representing different organizations. In 2016, we came to the committee. And in 2017, there was the food and nutrition in the food and nutrition security in the. So in terms of chronology, that's how things have followed each other. Part of, and this is not an excuse, an explanation, part of the milestones or the modest pace that we have made is that at each step of the consultation, issues have been raised by very important stakeholders like civil society, which had to be taken on board. And that's why we have gone back, including the last one of January 2017, we have gone back to say what are the key issues that the participants have raised and we've built them into the plan. And, Honorable Whip, costing comes at the end because we cannot cost a plan that is still going to change or to be amended because then the costs become distorted. We feel that we have reached a level of comfort where the detail of implementation is at sufficient level. That is why the two organizations we mentioned have now started with the costing of the plan. And we believe that even if there were two changes to be minor tweaking, the model that they are developing enables us that if you change the target, the cost immediately are adjusted. If you reduce the target or increase it, you have automatically you have a reflection of the impact of that of those amendments. Basically, that's the historical milestones, but the key achievement of this process is that different government departments are working together. And, in compared to the hemp issue, we feel that we are far ahead because in the 20 years that this work has been done previously, it has been done separately. In the last 3 years, we are working in an integrated manner, and we are seeing the results emerging, as you saw from the presentation. We meet every month, 12 government departments, plus international NGOs, plus local state, every month. And at that meeting, we hold each other accountable of what we have delivered, not what we have written in the plan, what we have delivered on the ground. My last point is about local government, and I fully agree with what honorable members have said. We are working with COGTA National, who are part of
this process. The 27 municipalities that Mr. Manuel was referring to were originally identified by COCT as the most underserved in terms of service delivery in the country. When we worked with other departments like basic education and health, that's where the other 14 districts come from, because Mr. Manuel showed 27 plus 14. So it was that process of saying we want to target the areas where the greatest need is at. And therefore, starting from the 27 districts that COCTA identified, we then added an additional 14 so that all the government departments responsible for service delivery have a common geographic area in which service delivery is being targeted to. Working with COCTA again, we are getting into a process of saying how does this plan that we are nearing finalization of feed into IDPs of local municipalities? How does it feed into IDPs of district municipalities? And what additional value are we bringing to those municipalities rather than just burdening them with interventions that they need to spearhead? So I just felt in terms of the process, I should just outline up to there, and I would like to hand over to my colleagues and to continue. Nishipai.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I should start with the question that has been asked on slide number 5 and slide number 6. The slide number 5 talks to the percentage, and I think it shows on the top left that it is those numbers are percentages of people who are vulnerable to hunger. Of course, it compares the reduction thereof or the impact of the grants to those numbers. That is the first part. Of course, the question that was asked by Honorable Maloyi on why the leveling, and I'm very careful because I recognize that I'm speaking on a public platform, that when there isn't adequate evidence, that I take my personal interpretations and put them to this. But there are a number of factors that would contribute to this. The fact that it may be that the grants that we provide versus the food prices could reduce this impact. The grants that we provide versus the utilization. But as I say, I was careful that in the absence of credible evidence that I make that conclusion. It's something I know it is being looked at the moment. On slide number 6, Honorable Steyn, that deals with the 14.3, it basically indicates both, well, in this case it indicates the individuals. In the previous slide gives you the households as well as the individuals who are receiving the grants. As they receive the grants, is the vulnerability reducing or remaining the same? The slide number 6 talks to people in terms of their access to food, the individuals, and here this particular measure or indicator talks to the modifications that individuals have to make to their diets because they have limited sources of available food. And we're giving that indication because, as I said already, our problem in the country, it's not so much of food availability as to access to even the available food. And that's the issue that we have to address. And that's why towards the end, we're talking about making sure that we are targeting the right people. We must identify exactly where are these 14.3 million in the country and therefore redirect the resources to those. That's what that graph is trying to indicate to us. One of the issues or one of the objectives
Chair, I think my question got lost, because if we compare slides 5 and 6, when you look at the, thank you for the clarification on percentage, because I didn't see percentage on the top of slide 5. But if you look at slide 5, where it says persons vulnerable to hunger, it says 13.1, which I now understand as percent, slide 5, the red or pink one. But if you go to slide 6 and you look at the bottom there, on the right hand, it says percentage, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, what, RSA on the bottom, it says 26.4, which is then also then percent. So I need to understand that. Why are we talking here on 26%? Because it's also then individuals. And this one is also then persons vulnerable with hunger. So they say, we are not sure. Are we talking about 26% people vulnerable to hunger? But on slide 5, persons vulnerable to hunger, we're talking about 13.1. So I'm not clear, Chair, what are we talking about? And I think that is what we need to clarify. Sorry, Chair, but I think it's important that we understand this. The two slides, to me, don't talk to each other.
Okay.
My apologies. Yes. The slide number 6, those percentages, we are comparing the people who have inadequate access to the total population. In Western Cape, you have a population of 6.2 million. 1.7 million people have inadequate access. You have 30% of the people in the Western Cape that have inadequate access. May I pass? Thank you. There was a question on slide number 10. Why has there been a fragmentation? I'm supposing Mr. Masilela was trying to address this, that we have had plans, we have had interventions, we have not pulled them together over time. And when we do not do that, the possibility of the same people who are considered poor in a particular area all benefiting to the exclusion of others is great, because social development will go and make an intervention, agriculture will go and make an intervention, and it does happen that one person gets more benefits until we pull all of those together. And this is what this plan is trying to do, so that we all account for the whole system of government supporting all the areas that have been identified, where we need to complementary activities, make sure that in that area you have complementary activities. And it's I think it's a part of the development of the system that we have interventions, we need to make sure that they are integrated. And this plan is trying to do exactly that. It is not that this plan is bringing out new things, but it's rationalizing, Mr. Masilela has already said that, rationalize so that with the same resources we can achieve more or have a bigger impact. The question of the Indaba, I believe Mr. Masilela would have answered that, yes, the plan going forward is to make sure that there is engagements and consultations are ongoing, and it is expected that the council that will sit, we are hoping and desiring that this council would meet by June, July, if at all possible. That's the plan, and we are working in that direction. And therefore, these consultations, ongoing consultations, will happen at that point under the leadership of council. The issue of producing more food, and I suppose I've explained that we are speaking the targeting, we are trying to address the access. This will not necessarily mean the Department of Agriculture that is
coordinating food production will reduce as a result. But we're saying whilst we maintain the production or increase the production, we must make sure that in addition to that, it deals with the aspect of targeting the right people. Otherwise, you would end up having the more, those who have more continue to have more. It's also a question of redirecting the resources where they are needed the most. I think there have been several questions on the school gardens. We are working with both the Department of Education and Social Development around improving and promoting the production in the schools. Yes, there are other complications because there are controls as a country in terms of the food safety, but that will not take away the continued need to create and grow the awareness of the production in the schools. And we will make sure that we address the food safety issues that will ultimately impact on the school gardens also. There was an issue around the legislation. No, on the grants, I'll leave it to Ntatene Chipale. The Limpopo. Again, we have some explanation for Limpopo. But again, this vulnerability assessment that we are doing, we would want to establish the complete facts that we do believe we've already seen from the outcomes of this, the SAVAC, that the Vembe district, for instance, is one of those districts where people are still producing. They have a lot of fruit trees, and their vulnerability compared to the Skukune district it's much lower. But we would want to make sure we have the full story from the studies. I believe I've talked to the impact and also why the provinces did not respond. By the way, we have already shared this draft document with the provinces, all the 9 provinces. And we had wanted their inputs. We still have to receive their inputs. And the plan is also to reach out province by province and present this. So we're doing a number of things together. Whilst we're working towards finalizing, at the same time, we would want to make sure that this plan is completely known in every province and all have had an opportunity. There was a question on slide number 16, Honorable Maloy. Is DAF leading? That strategic objective number 6 has a number of elements to it, but by and large we recognize the fact that nationally DPME is the lead on monitoring and evaluation. STATSSA is the lead custodian of the national statistics. We are participating there because there are risk management aspects, the disaster and climate change issues that we come into. But if you take that strategic objective, the main thing being the monitoring and evaluation, and that's why we wouldn't say we are necessarily leading. We are contributing as one of the lead departments because of the risk-related issues. But it is the competency of DPME to lead in that area. There was a question on the own production. Do we promote own production to alleviate and mitigate the shortage there? The answer is yes, but one must keep emphasizing when you have limited resources as a country, it is not that production will solve all the problems of all the people. We do need to address other aspects of equality of equality. Because people would require support in other areas to be able to access what they will not produce. None of us will produce everything of what you need. Even the commercial farmers, one will produce all the 10 hectares of spinach, but he has to buy all other things. Now, the problem
of our insecurity, people do not necessarily have the means to access. So to the extent that the production would help them also to reach the market and therefore have cash to be able to buy what the other things that they would require, it is very important that we would emphasize production with that understanding, not only production for consumption. The food safety issues, Chair, are being taken care of. One thing I should say is that this implementation plan puts the responsibility on each department to do what is in its mandate, but contribute to the whole. And the coordination in this plan is to make sure that we make sure that every department make its own contribution. Water and sanitation make contribution on water issues, availability and quality for food security. Agriculture contribute to production, to food safety. Health contributes to the nutrition issues. That's the understanding. And therefore, both the food safety and the climate change aspect, which agriculture, from the production perspective, would have to contribute to, will be brought into the plan via as part of the aspects and the contributions of agriculture, including the access to market. I believe I've dealt with most of the things. I'll pick up whatever may have been left if Mr. Nechipale.
Chair. I will focus on the areas that I will be able to respond to. I think the first question was I want to respond to relates to the gap between those that are on grants and the people that are in the middle. They are not on grants, they are not working. Status A always releases a report on those. If you look at the areas where we focus, one of the things that we do, we conduct with rural development what you call household profiling in the targeted poorest districts that has been identified. When we get those people, it's either you get them in the families in the majority, but our program has got two legs. One is the issue of provision of capacities and capabilities within the communities through the sustainable livelihood, where we educate them to be able to do things for themselves. And in collaboration with agriculture, they could go, not everybody will go to agriculture anyway, but they will identify areas where they need to be assisted with, where sustainable livelihood projects could be funded by DSD. Those that are more vulnerable, they will, and the household are poor, they will come to the community and development centers to access food. It also leads us to an area where, let's take, it's in a community where there's land for producing food. Those people will form either cooperative or small farm holders that agriculture support, we buy from them. There was a question, how do you make sure that you really things are bought from them? We expect that our implementing agents must sign a contract with those people. For example, if you produce 20,000 cabbages, we will guarantee all those and take them. Then that means that cooperative of 15 women or a small farm holding, we will have guaranteed that their cabbages will be bought by us. Quality of show, of course, will be determined because some of them are not quality. There are areas where you find that there's too much cabbages that we can't even buy. So we will have to redirect them to other places, like in KwaZulu-Natal, we find a cabbage per head, there were too much, more than 200 per head. So we won't be able to but those that we can, we'll be able to do. Example, in all the areas, there's a map that we have plotted. We expect that in terms of ECD and in terms of the drop-in center and community nutrition development center, at least we could buy from at least 5 to 10 cooperatives that are plowing, because they, some of them, they will do spinach, some of them will do cabbages, some of them will do other things. So we will do like that, but we always, the implementing agent will have a contract with those people, and we will report on that. We have got a report on that. We can tell you the whole country where we are buying. It's not everywhere, depending on the buying power that we have. We don't have the, all the powers. So that is how we deal with that. Once, let me finish the thought, the approach. Once people are in a community, they are now producing, they have got a certain income. For those that are on grants, still on grants, and they is, we have identified that we have got a program that we have developed in Gauteng. It's called Welfare to Work, where over 250 young people are trained and employed. Then we remove them from grants immediately because they are sustainable. They were sustainable. It's still very small, but several times the this means test that is done when you're given drunk grants. We hope that that will be rolled out in other provinces. There was a question whether we're working with local government and looking at indigent register. Yes, that's the first thing. When you do household profiling, you also look at the local area. You do that, assist local government in identifying their IDP plans and targeting. So we work with them, and the report becomes also their own report that we give it to them. There was an issue of ECD and the 6 rand. It is not 6 rand. They get 15 rand per person per day, daily, 15. But I indicated that studies have identified that, remember, they break that and say it means 6 rand can go for food, the other one goes for stationery, the other one goes to pay the school. So I was just breaking up. It's not only 6 rand per se. In ECD, they get, each child gets 15 rand per day. But when we do correlations in terms of the cost of a plate we provide in CNDCs, it came to just less than 6 rand per plate. When you have got a day, we have got a chicken, you have got pumpkin, you have got a cabbage or something, the green, the yellow, and whatever mixed in a plate. The treasury told us that it costs up to 6 rand per plate, or less than that. But in the ECDs, they get 15 rand per child per day. And they use that for variety of things. The issue of abuse of grant, yes, we are aware. Every time there's an evaluation that is done, we find that in different areas. But remember, nowadays you won't be able to cheat any grants because you have got biometrics that you need to put your finger to get there. But also there are education programs within DSD that assist women. Some of the issues that they get, and they do their hair instead of buying the food, we know about that, but I think there is a program where we educate mothers. Even there are some snippets, and I think we need to get the report, snippets on good things that out of the amount of money they get, some mothers bank the money and say, I'm able to take my kids to school with the money that they've collected, that they've saved a portion of that money. And we have got such cases. I've answered the issue of guarantees on buying from local. We stress it. You will know that the social development was very, we implemented the cooperative model, where to use the model to buying from our own people to make sure that we invest in the people that we have. It's because when you do the sustainable livelihood projects, we go to a village, find that per month, the amount that we live in that community there is more than 3 million. But people are still poor and there's no empowerment. So one of the things is to begin to say, maybe they should do issues like stock fell. They must also make sure that whatever is around, they are able to buy from those people. And we, in the programs that we are supporting, we monitor them strictly so that for reporting purposes. And we also have that amount. We spend in the SRT, we have got over 450 million that we spend, and we can indicate to you a certain percentage that goes to cooperative continuously. Which is a contribution to the radical economic transformation from the GSD. There was I think I've answered all the other issues of I'm not answering. I presented the slide from Department of Education, but I can't answer some of the questions. But what I know is that in the Department of Education, as part of the committee, they've got norms and standards which prescribes what kids need to eat on a daily basis. You will also know that it's not exactly what you will have a standard, but in other areas maybe you can find one or two things, incidences happening where kids are not eating appropriately. But one of the issues that we have is that we, through this plan, we are so integrated that one of the examples that it has fostered integration in that we, when we want to open a CNDC, we will look at what agricultural projects have in that area. For example, like small farm holding. We will also look at the rural development, the project that they are establishing in those areas. We will also working with local government. Social health will assist us in terms of the food safety, the nutritional part of it in terms of the guideline, and give us statistics, for example, the issue of high malnutrition rate. We started in areas like Mkhopong because health presented and say in this area there's high malnutrition. So we use this data to inform our implementation. We also use existing programs so that we can harness, so that we can be able to get the results out of what we are doing. So comprehensively, and the way we are now implementing as opposed to the 3 years back, we are much more integrated, and I think the impact will be much visible as we go, we implement the program. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, before the Honorable Minister takes over, because I can't speak after the Minister, our colleagues from the Department of Basic Education are co-members of the team, so that they couldn't be here with us today, as well as the colleagues from health. What we also picking up, Chair, as something that we need to improve is that we haven't shared the whole document with the committee. We've done PowerPoint presentations, but a lot of details are here. The National Food and Nutrition Security Plan is 151 pages long. So a lot of what the committee members are asking in terms of detail will be here. But yes, we do admit that it has not yet been submitted in its entirety. Chair, on the issue of the school, National School Nutrition Program, the first evaluation was done by the Public Service Commission in 2008. The second one was done by DPME in 2016, and that report can also be made available to the Commission. It looked at, the 2016 evaluation looked at four issues. One is the proportion of children who receive meals
every day as at the time that the evaluation was conducted. And it was found that it was 72.7%. And I think some of the issues about honorable members raised, or that honorable members raised about kids not being fed, might fall into the other 28%. But the evaluation found that 72.7% of children are being fed. Then they looked at the quality of the food that the children receive. They looked at starch, vegetables, and protein. And the evaluation report provides full details. It was found that the proportion of schools that serve between 81% and 100% of the required amount of starch has tripled from 2008. To 2016, from 6.1% of schools to 18.2% of schools, for example. The proportion of schools that serve between 81% and 100% of the required amount of vegetables in 2016 has improved compared to 2008. So it improved from 5.2% to 8.6%. Lastly, the proportion of schools that serve the required amount of protein improved from 3.4%. When I say 3.4%, I mean the proportion of schools that serve between 81 and 100% of what is required. Improved from 3.4% in 2008 to 21.4% in 2016. So the evaluation report is there. It shows improvement between 2008 and 2016, not only in the number of learners who receive nutritious meals per day, but also in the proportion of schools that serve good quality nutritious meals or to learners on a daily basis. But I think it's also worth the evaluation being presented to the committee in its full details, and also us submitting the entire report to members of the committee. Thank you very much.
Honorable Minister, you want? Oh, Honorable Ngoma. Oh. Thank you so much, Honorable Chair, for being co-opted just for the next few minutes. Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, Honorable Members, I just want to clarify a few areas, providing additional information related to the numbers. Responding to Honorable Maloyi, in terms of addressing the decline in percentage vulnerability, particularly of individuals. Mr. Manya did state that he's reluctant to speak without evidence, but I want to put it forward to the committee that there is evidence that since 2008, the cost of the basic food basket has risen significantly, restricting access to food, especially for indigent households. So that speaks to the effect of food prices since the there was this a global impact on the sector that also affected South Africa significantly. So that could be part of the explanation. The cost of living has increased since then. To Honorable Stain, I got a sense that you were uncertain in terms of the responses provided to your question. Let me just clarify that the unique differences between the data as presented on slide 10, or on slide 5 and slide 6. On slide 5, Statistics South Africa had asked households to indicate whether and how often adults and children went hungry because there was not enough food in the household. So the measure specifically was for hunger. When did you go hungry during this time? And we found that about 13.1% of individuals experienced that hunger based on that definition in 2015. Okay. and households about 7 million or something.
Okay. On slide 6, the measure there was slightly different. It was the household food insecurity access scale. The aim of that measure was to determine how many households had access to food. So that household food insecurity access measure is a slightly more sensitive measure of food access than the question on hunger. As a result, you'll see a higher percentage reported there. And your guiding percentage should be the 14.3 in 2015. Okay. Yes. That percentage in terms of individual. I hope that provides better clarity. The last issue I want to comment on relates to the food gardens. Not the last issue, the second last issue, Honorable Chairperson. The food gardens, if we look at the work on outcome 7, there's a specific emphasis around ensuring or harnessing opportunities presented by institutions, government institution platforms, your institutional gardens in schools, in clinics, in police stations, in hospitals. To what extent could those institutional gardens contribute towards food, increasing food production and access to food insecurity in that sense? I think the next presentation also on PAKISA will unpack a little bit on that work. Lastly, Honorable Kapa raises concerns around the law enforcement on M&E in those terms. I want to say that the evaluations conducted by DPME, the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, seeks to move in that direction. Even though law enforcement is not the primary focus, the focus of our evaluations is to identify gaps, weaknesses, and build measures to improve towards that. But in cases where the evaluations find serious misdemeanors financially, we're able to work with the National Treasurer to conduct expenditure reviews on the same program. So you have the evaluations by DPME and the expenditure reviews by National Treasurer that points to the financial misconduct, and you, based on those findings, one could commission forensic and other such interventions or recommend termination of programs. Yeah. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Members. That was the response. Any follow-up questions, Honorable Members? Oh, there is another response. Okay.
Apologies, Honorable Chair, for coming in late. Honorable Members, just one more input regarding to what extent. Oh, yeah. Apologies, my name is Mondli Mbele. I'm from the Department of Social Development. With respect to what extent is the plan responsive to issues of climate change. When you look on strategic objective number 1, there's issues pertaining to the propagation of drought-tolerant cultivars, introduction of indigenous crops, and so on and so forth. It's quite comprehensive. It's under that strategic objective. Maybe just one more input regarding matters of how do we monitor and ensure that indeed nutritious food is being served? I must applaud colleagues from the Department of Education, because a lot of what we've implemented from social development, we've learned it from them. They were the first, not a health department, to have full-time nutritionists and dietitians on board who works on menus. However, when you put a menu, it does not guarantee that it will be implemented. At social development, we had to add a fleet of vehicles that are used by CNDC coordinators, who their job on full-time basis is to monitor, visit these centers, announced and unannounced, to see to it that indeed nutritious food is being served. But another control measure is that if you use a bulk procurement system and dictate what food commodities should be put through the system, that means your output is definitely a nutritious food on the table. But the problem is when you do transfer payments, because you don't have control, the money is being used, and at times implementing agents are tempted to do those cost savings. So we are working with our health colleagues from home community-based care workers to do nutrition education, counseling, and monitoring at implementation level to ensure that what we envisaged is indeed delivered on the ground. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any follow-up question, Honourable Member? On health, probably. Oh, you've raised hands. Let me start with you. I thought you are not... Honourable Maloy and Honourable Papa and Honourable Stace.
No, Chair, mine is just a a comment which I would want the team to consider seriously. You see, Rema Silela, just to get an understanding, because some of these things might be contained in another document that has got the details. But from your presentation, let me make an example, and this is a serious concern. In 2013, that is the whole year, Cabinet approves a policy. In 2014, it's evaluation, that is the whole year. In 2015, it's a workshop with stakeholders, that is the whole year, for 12 months. In 2016, it's submission to the DP, to SPHDC, to ESEID, its submission, that is the whole year. Then in 2017 is the INDAP. So what you are telling me that is each and every activity takes a whole year. Because it means after the INDAP, because INDAP, they've made some submissions. Now, for the whole 2017, you'll be encapsulating those submissions. Then next year, for the whole year. So that's where my worry is. Because, you see, Chair, I was under the impression that the intergovernmental technical, task team is focused on this thing. So we don't have to wait for the whole year. They will not come with an excuse that because we are a department, we have other things that we are looking at. That's why for a year we hold an INDAP, then we relax. We focus on other things. We'll come the next year to do this thing. I thought that team focuses on this matter. You know, I was impressed when Mr. Masilela was saying they are meeting every month. Now, you see, if you are meeting every month, at least you should have completed this work from where I'm sitting long time ago. And you can imagine, by the way, the evaluation, you completed it in March. So the whole year, I don't know what was happening and so on. So I'm just saying, let's have some sense of agency. Let this thing called Pagisa, you know, Pagisa is it means you must move faster. Let it register in our heads that we need to move faster. We don't have time. We can't wait for another 20 years.
But I'm just saying, let's wait and see. But I suspect next year, you'll be giving me another year of you having to encapsulate other things and so on. So just attend to that. So, Chair, the last point which I wanted to raise, I think I will raise it when we deal with DPME. Because I see that slide which is here, Raymond, which you have skipped. When I went through this document, the DPME is addressing those. So I will attend to it when we deal with that presentation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Mine, just two questions. First, referring to Mr. Nchipale, your department is having very good intentions, but I'm worried when in the involvement, in your involvement in agriculture, there is not a prior involvement of the Department of Agriculture where you'll fund projects where maybe we wouldn't have had Department of Agriculture having had soil analysis and other things. And in that case, we'll find that the money that you have put there, it will at the end, having been accounted for, all every document is there that it has been spent, but you find that it hasn't achieved the objective of food production. Take, for example, where you can put a 2 million and you'll find that half of that has been there, putting fence and other things, people have been getting job creation, good is good. But now, that part of production, of food production, is not well done because agriculture has not been involved from the very onset. Otherwise, I agree the intention is good, but here it seems to me that there's a need that department, you should use those skills. For instance, where you use their officials to monitor the project. But if not the case, it becomes a problem. Now, the last one, which I think it will involve both the department and social development. What about this concept of food bank? Is it useful anywhere in this process of our food nutrition safety? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I need to agree with the urgency of this. And I'll tell you, Chair, what got to me when the presenter spoke about the deaths, to say at least we have now decreased to only 270 babies in the last quarter or children that died. Chair, it speaks to me of a sense of not caring. I was disturbed by that. And I see it, Chair, in the questions that I asked about page slide 5 and 6. I now understand what the difference is, kind of. But in future, Chair, that we can get a proper explanation. But the point is, 26% or how many is it, of our country's population, household people, 14.3 million people don't have food or is food insecure. That is the baseline. That is the point that we're discussing. And although so many people die of hunger in South Africa on a daily basis, while we have these things, 59 strategies, programs, things going along, but people are falling through the cracks. Not 10 or 15 or 20 or 100, 14.3 million people are we talking about. So, Chair, that's the urgency. That is the thing that we need to discuss and debate here on a daily basis. What is the role of the Department of Agriculture in that? Where are they? Why are our programs not working? Are we focusing on fund drought and other thing and while people can't plant? You know, that is the discussion, Chair, that we must take to our annual plans, to our pakisa, to our things that we're discussing. But again, it can't just be discussed, debated. I agree, Chair. There must be some kind of urgency going into this. Why are we not crying out when people don't have food every day? And it brings me back to another point, Chairperson, the whole thing of food health. And I'm not saying, please, that we must not provide safety when we give food to people. But if people go onto Aswippa and go and scavenge for food, then we have a policy on the Department of Health that says you can't give food away because it's near the verfall datum and all kinds of things. Chair, I think we need to look at this. There's millions of tons of food a year in South Africa that goes to waste because of legislation that we put on,
which is good. We must look at safety. We can't make sure that people die. But if people go rather to the aswip to go and look for food that was put into a bin and then thrown into an aswip, who checks the food safety of that? I really think, Chair, we must put some kind of urgency as a portfolio, and Chairperson, I think I must propose that we drive this issue and make sure that if the problem is not enough food in the country, the problem is people can't have access to that. What is the role of agriculture to play in that if people, children, die of hunger?
Okay. I know that health is not here. In the last meeting, we've raised the issue of environmental aspects, which have been transferred to the district municipalities. And there's been problems of that integration. And I'm not sure now they are settled, they are able to do the work. Because you look in both agriculture and obviously all other the department that's supposed to provide food. if you don't have the environmental inspectors in the areas, in the villages or everywhere, that's where the problem is. And the last time we were speaking on this report, we're raising the challenge that they have been transferred to district municipalities, and some they don't even have a vehicle to move from the office to another point. And how do they become that? The whole issue of food safety and the labeling of food, because you know, in most instances, in those areas that we give them contracts to provide food, that they know, social development, their username is very difficult to pronounce. you find that they prefer on the bulk buying, which is more cheaper. And this cheaper, again, goes to agriculture, of those that are dumping on the country, those that are not... the food that are not labeled, don't even know what they put in. And as long as our plan doesn't clean all those areas, we'll have a problem. But the question that I'm having is on the environmental health officers. Are they sorted? Are they now on the field? Are they do the work? Because actually they are supposed to be the friend of the agriculture. Those that will get them on the farm. Extension officers. They are supposed to be the friends of extension officers. As the extension officers manage the disease of the animals, taking the animals to the abattoir, there are somebody who's monitoring the animal in the abattoir to the people and even to the stomach. There should be that correlation. So that's the issue that maybe if there is any information around that on the environmental inspectors, can get clarity on that. But the other issue that we have raised, which is very important, and I know that it has been raised by the team that you have consulted, the increase of food prices. How do we deal with that? Because I know it's a problem, but we have to, as government, we have to work on it and deal with it, besides encouraging people to produce food for themselves, but in an area where you don't have people producing for themselves. If your social grant cannot even intervene because of the food price, it's a challenge that
think we need to work on, and in probably Mr. Masilela, in the next meeting, in your working team, we must have the team that look at these things and come up with some recommendations and see how we attend to those issues, because obviously it will be working for nothing. So our work will not be visible because somewhere, somehow, we are throwing, it's like throwing something in a deep sea which cannot be visible. So I think it's something that we have to look at. As we are going to summarize, I think in the next interaction, so because we have agreed that we are consolidating the policies and the plans, rationalizing them, and as we work, we're not stopping and say we're waiting for any policy. So in the next interactions, we should then have departments, as they come here, bring in the actual plan, what they do in those areas that we've identified. I'm very, you know, skeptical in the numbers of Northwest. Because if you look at the population of 3 million and you have 101 million and half not as having access to food, it's a half of the population. It means that we should say it's a crisis. If the half of the population cannot access food, it's scary. And how do you make even the leadership of those areas, like the leadership of the province of Northwest, understand this statistic? Because it's very critical for them to understand this statistic, to say actually half of your population, they are food insecure. And the programs, therefore, as you are saying that you want to redirect the funds to the poor, how are we going to see it responsive to such issues? And it's very clear that if you look at Limpopo, and that's what I've been assuming, I'm not sure I'm right, in areas of Vembe and Mopani, that's where you get, there's, even if people, they don't have money, but every house has got every fruit tree, and they've got every, they just go into the field and get something to eat. But I suppose the 9%, this 9% is where I come from, the Polokwane area and Skukune part of. So then how do you use this example of Limpopo in Eastern Cape in particular, where in your presentation, Dr. Ngomane, you remember you at some point you presented the issue of the land which are habitable for farming are mostly in Eastern Cape, and the majority of the people in Eastern Cape, they've got livestock. So how do we use that advantage to remove this number? And the other critical importance, these numbers in the province, are they using them as they plan? That's one of the things that we have invited honorable members of provincial legislature, so that we talk the same language. The planning should be talking to these numbers. Because now we don't have to struggle about what needs to be done, because there's evidence that there are challenges. In one meeting, Honorable Nkwinti, Minister of Rural Development, unpacked the budget of economic cluster, which it shows that the majority of the budget goes not focusing on the poor. It's focusing somewhere else, supporting this incentive of motor industry and all those things, it's not going to the poor. So I hope, as we are saying, the money will be directed to support the programs of the poor. Those things will be looked at and see the program, because one of the issues that were raised by doctors that we have called in the previous meeting, Minister, was that, you know, there is weakness of government. When they come up with another program, they don't evaluate other program and say, this one we delete them, they are not working, now we are introducing this new program. They just continue with those programs and put another program, and those programs trying to do the same thing, but at the ultimate end, you don't see the impact. So we hope this exercise will be able to help government to do those things in the next interaction with the team. Will then get a better story than this one. And before we close on this matter, I'll give you the opportunity to respond to those questions members ask, and then we give the minister to close on this topic, and then we release those that need to be released. That myself, Masilela.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and once more we do welcome the comments made by honourable members, and we also appreciate the issue of the sense of agency that has been raised, and to say we take it very seriously. We have not been doing one event per year and then going to sleep, and then waking up the following year and doing one event and going to sleep and then waking up. Maybe it's the nature of a PowerPoint presentation in that we have to be concise and just take the highlights, you know, and just take the highlights. But if that is how our work came through, it's not our intentions. We are working continuously. In fact, some of the slides which show progress, which my two colleagues presented, actually the results of the work of this committee. And it works continuously, Honorable Maloyi. And when we return, we will show systematically the milestones across the entire period. But we take the point very well that it's like one event per year, which is not intended and which is also not the case. And we've been, as we said when we started, we've been fixing the aircraft while it's been in motion. That is why we're able to come back here with some semblance of progress. And what we emphasize is that when we come here, we're going to do a single coherent presentation on a single coherent plan, that not each department is going to present its work separately. Because if we do that, we are back to the 59 programs. Now we are moving ahead with one single vision, with one comprehensive plan that we are dealing with. The issue of environmental health officers, Honorable Chair, you know, the Human Sciences Research Council, HSRC, conducted this funding study, and one of their findings is that it is due to the work of the environmental health officers that the objectives of the food fortification legislation have been achieved, because they have been investigating and enforcing, and, you know, sometimes incorrectly being referred to as the food inspectors, whereas they are environmental health officers. The transfer process is advanced, and as Chair says, there are those who have been transferred to municipalities who are now under different management. And Chair also remember that port health has been taken over by national health from provinces to national. So there are those who have moved in the opposite direction. But the Department of Health will provide you with a comprehensive report with the numbers and the budget, because the other issue was the budget, treasure transferring the budget from provinces to national, and the other way around where this is required. Lastly, before my two colleagues quickly answer the specific questions, for instance, around the food banks, so I'd like to agree with you about the need to zoom into provinces.
and unpack seriously in each province what is happening. Because we're working with them, but probably working with them with a national focus. But we should be working with them disaggregating, not only targeting the 27 municipalities and the 14, but also saying at the provincial level which picture is emerging.
So we will do that, Chair.
We agree. Thank you very much, Chair.
I didn't want to answer, but I'm forced to to answer. The honourable member requested me to request that issue of the food banking. I thought it was just a comment. The food banking is it's one of the mechanisms that is available, that was, and initially the department were working together with the Food Bank South Africa. I think from 2008, but we on a very closer look in terms of what it is, some of its principles, not all of them, undermines the transformation issue or the radical economic transformation, as you depend on the donated food. Which you get and then you bank those food, and there are certain areas that in the current ones, if the honourable member is talking about what was used to be Food Bank South Africa and the project that we are running currently, that the program was very urban focused. It used to have, remember the pick and pace and the guys, the shops are in the urban areas, so it's urban forecast. The food safety is a problem because we are going to get a lot of food into one area. Some food get expired before they cooled. The food that we donated is not only food; it's food and other food and other stuffs. But also, the approach generally. In general, some of these, it compromises the dignity of our people, because if they donate yogurt, you'll give them yogurt, and then if they're too much, by the time you consume them, they're all expired. I know they said we should use them. But the other issue is that it had a very high cost of food recovery, because they used to have trucks that must go and stand there at the literally at the pick and pace and others to collect the food that are donated, and that compromised the food. But the new approach that we have adopted of the having implementing agent in the province is in view that it empowers provinces themselves. Two, it assists in transformation, and it allows agent to be able to buy food from our own local communities, and also it allows all the things I think that we presented there. In its fact, I think when it came to South Africa at that time, it's useful. Some of the principles of it we can still use it if it's done and it doesn't undermine all the areas that we have identified. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, honourable members. We have taken all the questions, and I want to thank those who gave answers. Except that I would like to answer honourable Paulson on the issue of this team or the work done has not benefited poverty-stricken people is a debate. Of course, we have not reached, as the report is saying, where we would like to be in making sure that every poverty-stricken community can produce its own food. But on the issue you have raised on the Gamma Trust, the department confirmed that it has received the letter. But I would like to highlight the fact that the such kind of forests fall under the Department of Public Enterprises. Hence, they are run by a trust. But there are disputes within the communities and the trust. and I'm sure the report will be given to the chairperson, outlining the nature of the issues that are engaged. Because when you deal with trust, you have got people for whom they work. It depends whether you have got a thorough report there too. The debate that I think that must happen is to check whether trust or CPAs are the best instruments to be used. Not only to, I'm sure those who are from other areas know the complaint about trust. They undermine the, in essence, most of them are not answerable to the people they are supposed to be answering to. When funds are paid, there's no accountability or where they are used for programs. I'm not answering the question you raised because, as I'm saying, the office have received that, the DDG is dealing with it, will give the report of the Tara as to what is ongoing. But you use that as an example. And Subcall is a state company that manages and administers those Class A forests that are under the Department of Public Enterprises. Broadly speaking, I think we have got the message from different honorable members of the essence we need and the pace we need to increase in working this and more coordination. And I would think that the report has reached this stage and at the Masilela, maybe we need to agree that it must be submitted to the economic cluster so that all the ministers can take account for the... Really, it is a good report. It shows where we are going. And we'll be able then to, when we come back, we can say, having agreed where there should be coordination in terms of departments working together, in terms of us ensuring that provinces are made aware of these poverty nodes. And in the planning that they do, they need to make sure that some of the funds are targeted there. Because one thing I think the committee must make people appreciate is that people used to, the cost of production has gone very high. I think it's one element we need to agree on, is that the input costs are very expensive, and even to till the land is not an easy aspect. I think in commercial farming, to till a hectare, you spend around 8,000 rands. And a person who relies on a grant form may not be easy. I was talking to the DDG to say, let's look at a formula that can assist that people participate as well as government doing the same, because if we can improve production of basic food that is nutritious, we may reduce the extent to which people are exposed. But I've said I have taken down all the issues raised, and I agree with Honorable Molloy. We can't come back and say we had a workshop this year, then next year. We need to say, as ministries, this is the programs we are having on which there can be a work or a follow-up by members of the committee. And thanks then to Ms. Dane, I think we need to be cautious, by the way, of saying that the child mortality rate is not important. I'm not saying you're saying so. Because I think if you look at what was happening some years ago before government programs to deal with mother-to-child transmission and other things, we have done very well. Of course, there may still be areas where such things are missed. Even in terms of the work that the Department of Development is doing to ensure that each child has a grant assigned to it in one way or another. I'm sure the issue now would be, how do we make sure that we monitor and make sure that all those funds are, I'm sure that was the essence you were asking it. On issues of food safety, I think food safety applies to different levels. I mean, you can't allow, it is twofold, by the way. You access healthy food. But in this case, I'm sure the studies have shown that it is not only that there's no food available. For you to go to Checkers and buy food, you need money. So we need to find a way where the money from the grants can be utilized within the areas where it is, so that we create an economy within those areas. And I've taken the point about Chairperson, what would we do to improve the production of food by our own people in rural areas or wherever being used in the school nutrition, so that they get, I'm sure the question was, the kind of food they receive, the kind of food they get on daily basis, vis-a-vis the land that is in school. I'm sure those are things we'll take as we go, and I'm sure when we come back, we'll come with relevant answers. But I agree, we can continue saying we are continuously researching. On the issue, and I think the question that the person raised on why can't we learn from Limpopo, when we speak of agroforestry, I think the DDG is present. It's something we need to work on. Where the thing that was saying that one child, one tree, preferable a full tree, so that in each family, but again, trees will depend on the climatic conditions. For instance, I don't think I would dream of planting a mango tree in Tuchua where there's frost in winter. But each area would inform what trees and fruit trees we can plant. We take that wholeheartedly, that we need to promote that. Promote planting some of the indigenous plants that can survive in areas in which we are staying. And that there should be no, we need to make sure that land is put into use and we devise means of dividing land for, and I will take an issue of the programs we need to engage on. Chairperson spoke about livestock. Is broad, I think we'll come back with that part of saying, how do we do that? All growing, people who have got sheep benefit more. Don't wait until your sheep is slaughtered. You can use the wool as a means of living. All those things will come together as to say, how are we going forward? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister, for closing the issue. Honorable members will now go to the second presentation on Operation Pakisa. Those that have other commitments are not part of the Pakisa can be released if they will not feel offended that you undermine the committee. Pakisa, Doctor.
What I can say, I'm not going to lead on this one. There is somebody who's going to do it, which is Dr. Ngomane. But the fact is that the teams worked, there were five labs. There are five labs, there's seven work streams, and the president has launched the Operation Pakisa work. By July, we hope that all the teams and all the programs will come together, because the aim is to ensure that we get all stakeholders working together. We should be the financing institutions. It will be the trade unions dealing with the issues that are around it. Because there's one feature I think is very important in this, is that we want to ensure that training and skilling is very key, because currently farm workers don't get trained. They get on-the-job training, which is not recognized by any institution. And there's no skills that are portable. It deals with the issue of markets. It deals with the issue of making sure that banks are now also made interested into agriculture. And we need to ensure that we deal also with the issue of the rural land. That's why the Department of Land was part of the deal. And I can say that. Were part at administrative level until the process was, but was driven by leaders, I'm sure, who are going to speak on the matter. Dr. Ngomane.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, and Honorable Members. We are very excited today to have this opportunity as presented by the August Committee to present our Operation PAKISA on agriculture, land reform, and rural development. As the Honorable Minister has indicated, this is a very significant work for the sector that involves active participation and contribution by both the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries and the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform and other supporting departments that are engaged in the sector. What I'll do, Honorable Chairperson, is to give just a brief contextual introduction to this work, then allow the two departments to take us through the key initiatives and all that. By way of introduction, just to say to the committee and to other members that the Operation PAKISA work in government in its entirety is an embodiment of the implementation drive around the National Development Plan 2030 vision. We'll recall that in that MDP 2030, there's a commitment to create, as an example, 11 million jobs, to reduce unemployment by 6%. You know, this is not on the presentation. I'm just giving context and to help you better understand when the presentation comes. So, part of the 11 million, 1 million of that must come from the agricultural sector. That is why it was so critical for stakeholders in the sector to come together and say, how do we ensure this acceleration in our interventions, in our production systems, in our resourcing to ensure that we deliver on the commitment of the NDP. So I'll hand over to Mr. Manya to take us through what then PAKISA has done to take us towards the NDP Vision 2030. Mr. Manya.
Chair, perhaps I should start by saying this presentation we're giving to the members was the project was managed by former DAF Rowena Jumat. What is I going to say? There's a colleague from Rural Development, Marcela Meshomakulu. They have been full time on that. But I also see a number of participants who were at the lab, who are in this house. Or in this meeting, I will not necessarily introduce them, but we will run through. I would want to see how much I can save time, considering that we have taken quite some time, or some of your time. I think Dr. Ngomane has, on the slide number one, already given context to the National Development Plan, its vision, and therefore the intent of the PAKISA lab was intended basically to deliver on those aspects of the National Development Plan towards an inclusive rural economy, and ensure that what the President has announced on the 9-point plan is accelerated, and in this particular case on the revitalization. And we have listed the actions that would be contributed upon if we accelerate the implementation of the 9-point plan in terms of the creation of the 1 million jobs, the acquisition of strategic land, 2 million hectares, developing the underutilized land, making sure that it's brought into production and therefore contribute towards the local economic development and food security, and provide support to the smallholder producers to ensure that they participate meaningfully, and make sure that we promote food security we've been speaking about, and developing and implementing the special development plans, and lastly ensuring that this is characterized by strong rural urban linkages that increase investment in agro-processing, trade development, and access to the markets. The next few slides basically share the process, and I don't want to repeat much because the PAKISA methodology has already been presented to yourself during the Oceans Economy. But by and large, those 8 steps indicate how we have gone through the PAKISA to come to where we are, and it's showing you exactly also where are we at the moment, and I'll go through those steps. I've already indicated that the National Development Plan and the 9-point plan, particularly in our case RAVAC, requires us to review the agenda for land and agriculture, to make sure that the sector grows at the required rate. And we have done, we have worked on defining our intent, and we worked on a proposal through a number of series of workshops where we have invited various stakeholders, particularly in the industry, on the consultation workshops that were held to make sure that we define exactly what the scope would be of that particular lab. And when the inputs were received, we determined how much can be done in both agriculture and rural development from those concerns. We ended up with about 7 work streams. Initially, there were 8. We had to rationalize, and we actually compared this work with other PAKISAs. Health ended up with only 1 initiative to address. Education also 1. We know that Oceans Economy did about 4. We ended up with 7 work streams ourselves that ended up in the lab that was held in September, October. And there were 161 participants at that lab. And we, from the 7 work streams, we ended up with the 27 initiatives that you will see as we proceed. And we concluded the lab and produced the report, the draft report, which we have. And we have then allowed a process, which is step number 3, where the president did the launch. And between the launch and step number 4, which is what we are working towards of the open day, we need to finalize this report. We need to get all the commitments that need to be made from various stakeholders, both in the private and the public sector. And that would lead us to the next stage, which we expect will probably happen either June or July, depending on the date that the presidency would give. And at that point, we would be ready fully to implement those components of the PAKISA that would be in the immediate phases of implementation. The next slide, on slide number 7, the objectives of PAKISA are outlined there. Firstly, the intention to reduce the environmental impact of agricultural production through the interventions to improve soil fertility and managing environmentally sound pest control and improvements in water management. Secondly, to make sure that we address the fragmented and low impact both financial and non-financial support that is provided to the producers, and make sure that we both consolidate, we integrate, we rationalize, and we harmonize. And thirdly, to ensure equitable access to land for development and for agrarian transformation, determine the markets and improve the access to the markets for both categories of farmers, commercial and smallholder, and devise the interventions for economic growth of those industries and commodities that would have been identified as priority, and stimulate the development of the rural economy. The slide number 8 basically show you from these three categories of stakeholders, from business, from government, from civil society, who participated when we refer to the 161 participants who made their time available to remain there for the 5 weeks. And these participants were all allocated in the various work streams. I've indicated the seven work streams. The seven work streams included the three on the commodities, the grains, the horticulture, the livestock, and then, of course, the other four, the cross-cutting issues, which was the producer support, land reform, rural development, and labor. And that had to do with both their competencies and interests. And from the seven work streams, slide number 10 indicates there are 27 initiatives. If you see on that slide, there are 27 initiatives that came from the various work streams. And what we did after the lab was to further work to aggregate those initiatives that are in a similar field for implementation. For instance, those that dealt with optimizing management of natural resources, there are two of them. Those that are to do with the skills and capacity development, there are about four of them. Those that are to do with the funding, there are four of those. The value chain development, coordination and knowledge management, and those that are to do with the reconfiguring space and promoting functional rural settlement. And we've aggregated them. Now, I hope it's showing the colors, but those that are red are those that because we intend to implement in phases. Some of them may still need some deeper work to be done. Some of them are ready for implementation, and we've tried to separate those where there's a commitment between government, private sector, and other participants, that we can move on some of those initiatives. And the ones that are not red in on the screen, they look as green. Those are those that we believe we would move to implement them in the immediate. And of course, a number of considerations have been put in place. It's the resource commitments that are there, the capacity that we have, and as we mobilize both the capacity and the resources, and we gain the agreements, we would move to implement. The slide number 11, or slide number 10, my apologies, talks to the fact that the inclusive growth in agriculture lies at the heart of transformation. And therefore, the various work streams had to grapple with the issues of transformation in that particular work stream, whether it's in the grain industry or the horticulture or producer support. And they had to define from their perspective what transformation is, what it would entail, what would it take for this growth to be inclusive, and you would see the various indications. The first ones are the grains. You will see they said well, the narrowing of the inequality gap in the grain value chain is very important, and therefore there's a change in access of ownership to resources with sustainable participation and optimal use of the limited resources, and it goes on and on and on, and I wouldn't necessarily want to take all of those. And in slide number 11, we recognize that smallholders, producers, the SMMEs in agriculture, they are very important. They have a pivotal role to play in developing, in a developing country like ours, and therefore they should be put at the heart of this transformation agenda. Investment in people would be necessary, particularly in terms of the skill development to enable them to participate fully. And we would need to do a number of things, and I wouldn't want to, and you'd see each commodity, the livestock, they've given an indication around the capacitation issues. The one that looks like a tractor comes from the producer support. They have proposed an Indima desk. The grains, they've also spoken to that there is a need for grains know-how. That's the initiative that they proposed that would contribute to the capacitation of the producers. In the next slide, there's initiatives that they have to do that would address the unlocking the constraints to growth. And there are several initiatives that have been indicated. For instance, livestock have two initiatives: enhanced animal health through revolutionary veterinary services, that they're one of the initiatives that they've proposed. They've also proposed the fortified farm management for sustainable livestock production. And the producer support has produced proposed an initiative on harmonization of legislative framework that affects the value chains. And there's a need for augmenting in rural development the existing essential basic services rollout program. So all that would contribute towards creating that enabling environment that removes the constraints to growth. And slide number 13, in terms of equitable access to all the markets and resources, as a focus area in transforming the sector to ensure inclusive growth, there are initiatives that have been proposed to improve the market access, change ownership patterns away from market dominance, and a number of initiatives have been proposed in slide number 13. In slide number 14, the initiatives there are aimed at protecting basic human rights in all agriculture, and their access to secure resources for basic survival. And there are initiatives that came from various work streams that contribute to that aspect of sustainable livelihoods. And the next slide, they talk to the aspect from the land reform work streams. There were five initiatives that are listed there. The one is has to do with ensuring that there are district land reform delivery centers that will act as local implementing agents of land reform, and therefore ensure that the land reform initiatives are designed and implemented according to the local needs, considering the local plans, local economic development plans. So there are five initiatives. The second one has to do with fast-tracking the land settlement of the outstanding claims, promoting and protecting the rights of persons living under insecure tenure. The fourth one to do with the accelerated land development and redistribution initiative. And the fifth one to do with the financial partnerships for accelerated and sustainable land reform. And the slides that follows basically unpack on that. Slide number 17 talks to the work stream in horticulture. The livestock, horticulture, and the grains, those are the three commodity value chains. And in horticulture, there are initiatives that to do with an inclusive value chain, horticulture value chain, and trade promotion, retention, and optimization. They often talk to the trade pro, and unlocking water to expand horticultural production. And this is what the work stream had proposed, that if we're going to get the horticulture value chain to move faster, these are the issues that we would have to address, and these are the issues that we will have to grapple with. On slide number 18, the livestock initiative had five initiatives. One had to do with the skills and knowledge upgrading program, access to commercial and alternative livestock value chain, and thirdly, national livestock census and animal identification and traceability program to ensure both the safety, market access and trade in this area. And the fourth one, enhance animal health through a revolutionary veterinary service. And members would remember a lot of issues have been raised before evaluations have been done, and a strategy was presented at some point, and it has been proposed to be taken further. And fifthly, the fortified veld management sustainable livestock production. On slide number 19, the grain as work stream made a proposal of three initiatives, one on the integrated value chains and unlocking finance through the triple P, public-private partnership, and thirdly on the grains know-how. On the producer support, which was the fourth one, four initiatives were proposed, demo desk or agri desk, if you like, re-engineering agricultural development finance, a dynamic business model for producer support, and this model is intended to make sure that we are responsive to the support we provide to the producers, and harmonization of the legislative framework that affect the value chain. And one, Chair, I would want to move to the producer support on slide number 22. The issue that was raised here by the farmers at the lab was that our services are very fragmented. And therefore, this demo desk or agriculture desk is basically intended to establish a virtual platform that centralizes information and connecting the producers and those who would provide the services, whereas the dynamic business model will add value to those services that are provided through this particular desk that has been referred to, and the need to re-engineer the agricultural development finance to make sure that you blend all the sources of funding, both grant and loan funds, so that you could maximize the utilization for those who qualify for those. And this is one that will be worked on. On the rural development front, there were three initiatives. One had to do with, of course, providing leadership and coordination for structural transformation, and that would go through the whole aspect from planning through to the monitoring at that level. The augmentation of existing essential basic service rollout programs and the rural enterprise development. Those were the three initiatives that were proposed under rural development. And the, particularly the first initiative had put a big emphasis that we could do more with the resources that we have in the rural space if there is a stronger coordination mechanism on both the budgets the resources and the programs that we have. And of course, on the slide number 23, on the augmentation of existing basic service rollout program, and this was, the emphasis was on fast-tracking the off-grid solutions that would deliver initial universal access to essential basic services much faster, affordably, than if we were to wait and move on the normal or conventional services. On the labor, slide 24, there are four initiatives that have been identified: the National Agricultural Decent Work Program, the Farm Worker House and Land Ownership Program, the Demand-Led Public-Private Agri-Skills Unit, and strengthening the legal compliance mechanism. One of the issues that have been raised very strongly is that if you have and I believe Minister often raised this, that you have a person who has been a machine operator. He works for 20 years, he leaves this farm, he goes another place. He can't produce proof that he is a skilled machine operator, and there's a need for us to bring formalization and recognition of those experiences. Chair, and I've already indicated that these 27 initiatives, we have actually grouped them into the various fields of practice for implementation purposes. And with the next few steps that we are doing at the moment is to ensure that we finalize the cost of each one. There was a dedicated team that worked on the costing and make sure we mobilize the resources. And I know in some areas where we presented this, people have been asking, do you have the money? But if you go to Treasury, they will say, do you have the plan? So do you have the plan to be able to mobilize the resources? And we believe this PAKISA plan enables us to both reprioritize on what we have and refocus it, but also use the same plan to look for additional resources. And those are the next steps that are being undertaken. We all recognize the fact that agriculture is heavily underfunded. But those who would fund also would say, show us the plan, give us the plan, make your arguments based on the plan. And this plan is intended to provide support to that. Slide number 26, we are busy institutionalizing how we would implement both DAF and rural development as our setting up a delivery unit that will be operated from both, because we have those two components, and we have looked at other structures that are being used, and we're drawing from the lessons from the oceans economy. And the intention is that by the time when the open day comes, probably in July, we have all the systems in place. One must indicate that PAKISA has not necessarily brought everything that is new, but to consolidate, to accelerate, yes, in some areas there are new things, but in the main, it's making sure that what we have works better and faster with a bigger impact. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Manya. Thank you, Chairperson. Just by way of conclusion, we want to underscore two points. One relates to the funding for the sector. You know, various studies and various reports point to the loss in opportunity that the country is facing as a result of, you know, the declining investment on the agricultural sector. So if we think of agriculture as a key determinant for rural transformation, inclusive growth, then probably that's an area that needs to be revisited at a much higher level. The second issue I want to bring to the attention to the of the committee through you, Madam Chairperson, is that during the launch of the package on the 24th of February, there were indications from the presidency that probably the PAKISA did not go far enough to address challenges around land reform. This we also acknowledged during the PAKISA program that probably the composition of stakeholders in the land reform work stream, as well as the time, the five-week period to deal with this complexity around land reform was inadequate and needed to be revisited. So the initiatives as proposed are good enough, but not radical enough to ensure that we achieve the desired economic transformation through land reform. So we took a resolution post the lab to conduct a mini lab focusing solely on land reform, and that will be driven by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. We do have assurance, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, that they will try to do so during the month of April. So by the time we go to the open day in July, we have a more radical initiative on land reform. That's all by way of addition. Maybe just a quick question. We don't know whether the participants in the package are allowed to make an input or so in this forum. I'm just asking your person. Thank you.
If probably if the question has been raised, they can respond to those questions. Yeah. Thank you, Doctor and Dr. Mania, for this presentation. Members, the time is 1:30, and we are journeying for lunch. We'll come back at 2:00. Can we make it 30 minutes, or we need 1 hour? Because we had to go and buy. Unfortunately, we have not organized lunch. Yeah. Let's say 2:30. Let's come back 2:30 at the same building. Thank you very much. The meeting is...